Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/FTSW. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Come to Air Temple Island, the new home. I'm the Avatar. You got a chair with it.
You're the Avatar, and I'm an idiot.
You're a firebender. Boil it yourself.
Bolin's got some moves, huh?
I will make no such promises.
The morning is evil.
We shall meet again soon, beautiful woman.
I've been dying to ask you, what happened to Zuko's mom?
I can't wait to get started. Yes! Finally!
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar The Last Airbender and The Legend of Korra podcast for DongBuFang.net. If you want extensive in-depth discussion on Korra from longtime knowledgeable fans of Avatar and longtime fandom members, then this is the podcast for you. I am your main host Dylan, and today I'm joined by Mel.
Hello.
Sam.
What?
Teresa.
Hi.
And Jeff.
Hello.
Korra is back. Hooray. And today,
Yay. And today
we'll be discussing Finally. The first two episodes of Korra, The Rebel Spirit and the Southern Lights. We'll be going through them episode by episode. If this is your first time listening to From the Spirit World, thank you for tuning in. We are big fans of Avatar and Korra and have been for a while. If you are a big fan as well, this is a good podcast for you, but I also think that casual fans can definitely listen. We make like references that have fandom terms in them frequently, but I will be trying to explain everything we use that might not be apparent. I would say this podcast has two viewpoints approaching Korra, which are from a fan point of view and also from a critical point of view. So we will be super excited about everything that happens, but also try to critically analyze the episodes. Podcasts will be up Fridays by midnight, so very soon after the episodes air. Korra, of course, is airing Fridays at 7 this season. You can email us at dylan@dongbufang.net, visit our podcast website at dongbufang.net/podcast, and visit our Tumblr and Twitter at dongbufang, no spaces. Before we start, a quick shout-out to the Big Pole Podcast, who gave us a nice plug in their latest one. They had Mike, co-creator of Avatar and Korra, of course, on with them, along Kurt Matilla, host, along with Giancarlo and Angela Marie Volpe. And you should check that. It's their 37th podcast. And we'll have more info and podcast of the end, but right now let's get to Korra and the Rebels and Rebel Spirit. If you are not aware, they aired Rebel Spirit at Comic-Con, so many of us, Mel and Sam have seen this already, but we saw it in bad quality, so it was nice to see it in nice quality on TV. Why don't we go around the horn here? This also helps you get familiar with people's voices. And let me know what your initial reactions are to Rebel Spirit. You can say if you'd seen it before, and how maybe seeing it now may have changed your opinion, just whether you liked it or not, how excited you are seeing it. Let's start with Mel.
I actually liked it a lot. Not that I was expecting not to. It's just that I really liked the way they introduced all the characters and went through and all the new characters that I was really, really excited for. And seeing them was pretty awesome. And they all got, with introducing the new characters, it was, you know, they got their couple minutes to, as sort of an introduction, and then they moved on to the next point, and it didn't feel too exposition-y. Like, things moved throughout the episode. I thought that was really good. I think it's a much better opener than the season one opener.
Okay. Sam, what did you think?
Are we just talking about Rebel Spirit or both of them?
Yeah, just Rebel Spirit right now.
Well, it was good, I guess. Things happened. I liked it. I don't know. I don't really know what to say.
Okay.
I'm not really enthusiastic because I've already seen it, and like I've already had like the spazzy period.
Yeah, I agree for this episode. Teresa.
Well, I have not seen it. I didn't see any of the Comic-Con covers, so I was extremely excited, and I would say that my expectations were reached. It was what I, you know, expected for a first episode. I agree with Mel on how I liked how they introduced all the characters. But I mean, it wasn't like outstanding, but I was just so excited that it's finally back after a year and a half that I was, yeah, it was good. I approve.
Jeff.
I was super excited for this. I had not seen it before. I had seen like I think, yeah, they released a bit of footage from the beginning, like where they introduced where all the characters are at, but, so I hadn't seen that, but none of the other stuff. A bit of the pacing was off for me a little bit, and Cora was a bit of a jerk. I'm sure we'll talk about that later.
Absolutely.
It was a pretty solid intro to the series season.
Okay. Yeah, I thought this was a pretty decent season opener. I've had a lot of time to think about this episode because I saw the cam recording from Comic-Con. I don't think this is an outstanding episode of television. I think it's not really a cohesive unit, and I think it's similar to The Awakening, the season Avatar season 3 premiere, in that they just do a lot of things and try to make it come together, and it doesn't really come together that well for me, but certainly there's a lot of exciting aspects here. In this episode, I thought the animation was much better than I expected with the new animation studio, Studio Pierrot, and we'll talk about that. Not so much in the next episode, but I thought it was pretty solid. They introduced interesting elements, definitely shipping Boleska, Bolon, and Escahard after this, and it only continues with the next episode. And in terms of the main plot of the episode, I didn't really care that much, which might have been a bit of a problem with this. So let's start getting into specific aspects of Rebel Spirit. I'm going to try not to have this be a recap, more of a discussion, but certainly we have to go over specific parts of the episode. So I apologize if we recap too much, but we're going to mostly try to get most discussion from this. So first we get the announcer last time. He says things have happened since last season, and the Republic City Council has been disbanded, and there's now a president, and that's really all we get from that. Are there any? Do we have any theories on what may have happened more specifically here?
Well, I mean, it seems like even though they didn't, even though they're not going to revisit the Equalist movement at all, it looks like it had an effect, and they brought down the bending establishment.
That's interesting. I don't know if they thought about that, honestly. I don't know what they're doing with this, because they don't seem to feel a need to revisit the Equalists at all.
Yeah, I was looking forward a little bit to some, you know, a little bit of world building in Republic City now that we have these changes, like, you know, Mako interacting with the police department or, you know, whatever. But no, it's just like, here's these people, now let's keep flying over the canyon.
Yeah, and presumably we'll come back to Republic City at some point, but because we do see a little bit in the trailers of it, of what probably is Republic City, but definitely not anytime soon. Probably not in the next 4 or 5, maybe even 6, 7 episodes.
Is that because the animation looks good?
Yeah, that might be Studio Mirror animation. So, like, I guess the first thing I want to talk about, other than that, like, and it's been 6 months since last. I don't know if I mentioned that. I guess what I'm going to try to do now is, like, find a quote-unquote main plot of each episode. And we're going to discuss that first and then get into more of the specifics. I would say the main plot of this episode would be Tenzin versus Unalaq, not in terms of those two clashing, but in terms of Korra deciding which philosophy she wants to go to for her tutelage, or that's not a correct usage, but yeah. And they kind of intersperse this throughout the episode, and it comes to a head at the end with the final scene.
I would say it's more of Tenzin plus Tonrak versus Unalaq, because I don't know if Tenzin played much of a role.
Yeah, certainly it's...
I agree with Jeff. I felt it was more those two butting heads.
Certainly it's Tonrak defending Tenzin's philosophies, I guess. And this definitely culminates in the next episode, when we see the whole rivalry between the two.
Yeah, I mean, to me it felt more like, you know, it was Unalaq... No, wait, I can get their names right. I always confuse them. Unalaq's the uncle, yes. It was Unalaq versus Tenzin, but, you know, Tenzin wasn't really vocal about it as much as Tonrak just jumped in there and was like, no, he's, you know, it was that sort of deal. So it was kind of like a weird dynamic, I guess, but I feel like it's more about Tonrak versus Unalaq than anything else, with or without Tenzin.
Tenzin's kind of a non-presence, I would say, in this episode. In my opinion, kind of how he was in book one as well. I think the major problem with this, and maybe with the episode, is that a lot of the emotional resonance that we get at the end of the episode is dependent on us caring about Tenzin and Tenzin and Korra's relationship. And I think that if this episode is like sad or whatever at the end, if you don't want to see Korra and Tenzin separated, does anyone really feel that at the end?
I don't care.
Okay, well,
that was kind of sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Considering all that they went through with Amon, assuming they don't completely skip that in the beginning with the announcer, but you know, knowing all that and seeing what they went through and kind of watching them build their relationship in season one, it to me, you know, was pretty sad to see her make what is obviously the wrong choice.
Well, we will discuss that. But
it. That's my defense.
Yes, Jeff?
I wonder if Korra and just life has just been wearing down on Tenzin, because he seemed a little bit, like, tired or, like, world-weary.
He did, you know? Yeah.
Because he didn't, season one, Tenzin might have put up more of a fight, I feel like, but now it's like, fine, go do your thing, I can't stop you.
Yeah, I agree with that, he's very passive. I guess my point here is that I think that this, depending on this emotional resonance, ultimately it fails, at least for me, because I didn't really care in book one about Tenzin and Korra's relationship. I really don't think that they established the character of Tenzin very well last season. And so now they're depending on that in order for us to care about a lot of what happens in this episode. I'd say I don't think they established Tenzin well, because, I mean, on a personal level, I don't care that much about him, which is odd because he is Aang Katara's airbending son. Like, for me not to care about his character is pretty, I don't know, that seems weird because I ship Aang Katara so much.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more that you care, at least for me, I care about more about Tenzin in relation to other people. Like, yes, I care about Tenzin and Korra's relationship, but it's not that I care about Tenzin as a character. It's that this relationship he has. I think Korra is a much more defined character than Tenzin, but it's hard for me to separate him from anyone else and liking him. Like, for example, you know, he's the Cloud Baby, and that's a big reason why I like him. It's not him on his own.
Yes, and Cloud Baby refers to Aang Katara's children.
Yeah, it's true. It's like we don't see him interact with himself or grow with himself or anything. It's always him and someone else.
Yeah, and I don't know if Tenzin's character needs like his own episodes and stuff, but I think this episode depended too much on us caring about him and Korra.
I don't know if that's the case, really, but whatever.
Okay. Well, we'll certainly get more into this when we get to those scenes. I guess the intro of this episode was weird after the animatic. It had this this like horror scene from On a Boat with the Spirit Attack. I don't think this is something that they've really done before. It's very not Avatar-y.
Hmm. Yeah, because someone actually dies like on screen.
Well,
I did think that. I thought, wow, like I think multiple people died on screen on that.
It's like that guy who got smashed into the wall in the training camp.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, not necessarily even in terms of that. Just focusing on a random character before we even see anyone else as a lead-in. They do focus on random characters at some point, but in Avatar, but not like in this way, like as the lead for an episode. I don't think. Maybe they have. Maybe I'm wrong. But it just seems very odd for them. And certain,
it kind of seems like they do that in like books and stuff. They have a prologue in a book, and there'll be a character who you never see again, and it's completely unrelated to the main character. But what happens to them in the prologue like has an effect on the rest of the book. So yeah, I mean, it makes sense like that. But,
well,
that's a Game of Thrones.
It's not totally wasn't referencing. No, it wasn't.
The first thing I think of is like I think Harry Potter book six when they show they have whoever's the prime minister or whoever.
Oh, the conversation between the two prime ministers, the wizard and the regular one, who's totally not Tony Blair or anyone.
Yeah, so that's what I think of when I think of intros to books like that. But yeah, this is more maybe of a storytelling device. Maybe this is an influence of new writers Tim Hedrick and Josh Hamilton. By the way, Tim Hedrick wrote this episode, Josh Hamilton wrote the next one, according to the credits. I guess it's possible that they credited both with the next episode, because we only see at the end written by Tim Hedrick, Josh Hamilton, because they combined the two in for airing. Bumi, I know you love Bumi, Mel. We see the only thing that we see out of Bumi, I would say, in this episode is Bumi making
sarcasm. Awesome.
Umi making sarcastic comments in a similar voice each time.
Oh yeah, I'm not saying he's a beautifully defined character with deep feelings or anything. He's great to watch and have in my life. So, I mean, yeah, I assume we're going somewhere with all this, or I hope we are, but for right now, I mean, I don't mind him being anything else than just kind of the funny guy. I mean, that's awful to say because, you know, it's basically a caricature of a character, but I enjoy his caricature a lot.
I certainly hope we see more of him than him talking in that same deadpan voice.
Yeah, I was not a fan of his voice acting.
There's nothing wrong with deadpan.
Yeah, honestly, I would say he was one of the weaker new voice actors. But I don't know, it was certainly funny. I guess they established what they wanted him to be.
Amon is what they wanted him to be.
Yeah, apparently not Amon. Yes, yes.
It's at least some people on the internet are like complaining about his skin color. I didn't notice anything. Did any of you?
Well, no. Well, Brian wrote a post on this a while ago. He's talking about the specific skin color of each of the three children of Aang and Katara and how they're varying skin tones from Aang to Katara and that they stay the same. They are that skin color, however lighting changes. You can check out that blog post on Brian's Tumblr, briankanitsko.tumblr.com, I think.
It's a good one.
Yeah, certainly, but people may complain because they often show the characters in light, which would make his skin color appear lighter than it is, I guess. Yes.
It just seemed... Well, no. Actually, no. I'm not. I'm going to keep it to myself. Never mind.
Okay. One thing I really liked from these intro scenes was we actually see Iki and Jinora talking to each other. If you noticed in book one, that literally never happened.
Bechdel test for a TV show? I don't think it works that way.
Well, no. But it's a problem when you have the two female siblings and they're just not talking, like they're not important enough to talk to each other. It seems like this is being rectified. There's specifically two parts where they...
Well, did anyone complain about that in book one though?
I did, yes.
Really?
Maybe, okay. Maybe after the fact, but I didn't really notice it until the end.
Well, they never really talked to Milo either. None of the siblings really interacted.
Well,
they
Milo had a scene with Iki in the car. Yeah, that's true. The siblings
barely. They were just there at the same time. I mean...
Yeah, I agree. But this is more of an overall problem, which I'll get to several times throughout this, of Korra, despite having a female lead, being very male-dominated. And I will certainly defend that claim as we move on in the podcast. Some great lines here between the kids. Iki wants a lightning bolt tattoo, and she also says, "You don't make any sense," to Jinora, which is great.
You don't make any sense. It doesn't make sense.
Didn't they do that once before? And I was... Sarkor.
They did something like that where it was a comeback.
You're a bad idea.
That was it.
There you go. Exactly. Yeah. I love lines like that. I know they're very dumb.
I can confirm that that's definitely how I talk to my older sister.
Very realistic, yes.
Yes.
That's how I talk to Dylan.
Yeah, that's true. And Sam do that a lot. Intros to all the characters. Tanrak, Lok, Senna does absolutely nothing.
That kind of upset me. I hope that she has more of a role.
Pema,
I was so excited about seeing more about Korra's parents.
And Pema has one line in the second episode, I believe, and that's it. This is more evidence being thrown out there. Intros. The most interesting introduction is to Desna and Eska, Northern
Aubrey Plaza. Twins.
So first of all, Aubrey Plaza, she seems perfect for this role. I like it. I assume they realized that she was the only one they could have for Eska.
I think her very first like clipped line, I mean, it seemed a bit too robotic for me, but then got better later on.
Yeah, I agree. She starts off very, very robotic with them talking to each other and stuff. So this intro is interesting, probably in a bad way, but we see the, unfortunately, very stereotypical thing of a male misidentifying another male as a female and then freaking out after he is realized that is a female. So in a sitcom, what happened here is that Bolin would have freaked out a lot more than he actually did. Bolin's reaction is maybe more neutral, I would say.
Basically, which one's the girl or something like that.
See, like, when we saw the crappy quality of this, I thought that it was much more neutral. Watching it, his eyes bugged out a lot more, and he seemed more freaked out. So
the problem with this, you mean, is that Bolin's just being written off again as a comedic pun?
No, the problem, well, yes, that is definitely true. But the problem with this is that this is homophobic, gay-fearing. We are leaving, there's no possibility that Bolin could ever be attracted to Desna, is what is established
because here. Now, because he's a guy. Like, when he thought it was a girl, it was fine, but then he finds out it's a guy, and he's like, oh, well, that's, you know, which one's the girl? Like, he wants to, you know, he's trying to purposely differentiate them, when before there was no problem. And now, yes. Oh, it's because it's a guy, there's a problem now.
Yep. I didn't expect anything else from them, which is probably pretty sad. Them referring to Mike and Brian here. They've seen no evidence of gay characters in the Avatar universe. And we're rejecting the very notion of it here. I think this is very, very troubling. The only takeaway I would have from the scene in a positive light is that they didn't do it as bad as another show might have done it. Opinions?
I'm surprised they even did it at all.
Especially, on a children's show, you know, that's a perfect platform to kind of try, you know, and weed out these ideas like homophobia. Not that a children's show is going to solve it, but, you know, there's no harm in a children's show in having characters who are not straight. I mean, there's literally nothing wrong with it. And the fact that they would go out of their way to, well, it's not even out of their way because it is unfortunately so common, but to make a joke, essentially, out of homophobia and homosexuality is annoying to see on a children's show.
We're not saying Bolin has to be attracted to males, but the problem is that not even Bolin, but the viewpoint of the show, they play it for laughs, is just rejecting the very idea of it. And I really don't see how you could see the scene as a deal. Some of you may initially reject viewing the scene this way and should say, oh, it's a joke, deal with it, but really, it's pretty obvious that that the problems that this has. If you look,
I'm just
deeper.
Really surprised that they went there. They just
in a bad way or a good way.
In a bad way.
Yeah,
I don't like in Avatar, like the original series. Would they ever?
There's do nothing like this.
That?
No,
nothing like that.
No, yeah,
and I'm they're just in with the fart jokes and in with the gay.
Avatar had fart jokes.
The fact that they broached it all, like, I see what Sam's saying, like, you know, Avatar may have not had, you know, gay characters, but they never made a joke out of homophobia, and now they are making a blatant joke out of, like, oh, we thought that guy was a girl.
And they're using Bolin for it, too!
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Which is very, yes, very upsetting.
Personally, there's a lot of upsetting things about it.
Yes, Jeff?
I doubt the writers were thinking of this when they put this scene together.
Well, certainly they're not thinking, oh, let's make fun of gay people. But
I mean, because we've established that Bolin is straight, and...
Well, we've established Bolin likes females, yes.
Yeah.
He could be bi.
Part of the problem is, too, is that they didn't notice, that it seems like such a natural thing, like, oh, let's make this joke, is a huge part of the problem.
I really think the problem is that they're so not caring about this type of thing. They didn't even think that this might be a problem, when it's very really apparent, in my opinion. If you're trained to look at this type of thing, like, then this is very, very apparent that it's bad. Let's move on, because that was only one line of the episode. We'll probably get back to more things like there's no gay characters in the Avatar universe, but more than that, this problem had a more of a overarching problem with females not having being prominent, and we'll get to that when we get there. We have a harsh introduction to the Unalaq versus Tenzin / Tanrat conflict, where it's like they just go in right away. And I think this happens a lot. We just see these scenes, they start arguing, and it's like, oh, okay, we're going to have another scene that tries to establish the main plot of the episode. I don't even remember what they say in this, honestly.
They say, like, hello, brother, just, or something like that. And there's, like, a shocking, and then it cuts to commercial.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, literally,
I just can't bring
it's
myself
just
to
it's Tanrak, Unalaq, Tanrak, why? Tonrak says, like, oh, it's the chief of the North come to grace us with his presence. Like, we don't know why at this point. I think they're conflicting. We just know that they don't like
each other. We're being very negative. On a more positive note, we see the Varric, Asami, and Bolin scene, which is very good.
I love Varric.
Varric's introduction is awesome. This is a very, very good introduction, I would say.
He was not what I was expecting, and that was in a good way.
Yeah, when we saw his battle, you can't expect a character to act like that.
I didn't expect what he would do next, but I couldn't predict him.
He was very animated.
That was terrible.
You know, Dylan, the mark of a good pun is someone insulting you directly afterwards, so thank you
That's probably true. Yeah, Varric, Sam, talk about him. I forget who he's modeled after.
Howard Hughes.
Yeah, talk about Howard Hughes. Yeah.
Sam, talk about Howard Hughes.
I did, like, a paper on Howard Hughes once, and so I'm the expert. Howard Hughes, like, he was just really eccentric, rich guy who was in the film industry, who was in the airplanes and technology and stuff. And, yeah, that's what Howard Hughes did in life.
Good summary, yes.
I guess, obviously they're, like, modeling Greg after him with all, like, the moving picture stuff and the eccentricities. Except I think Howard Hughes is actually obsessive-compulsive. Anyway. Yeah, so...
Yeah, certainly Matt modeled after Howard Hughes. They're kind of... They want this, like, eccentric 20s figure. And
yes.
Certainly what they're getting.
I love him.
The scene is just very well done, I would say, in terms of humor beats. And also showing the interaction between Asami and Bull. And the scene really accomplishes a lot.
And then there's a ginger.
Yes. Which... doesn't make sense genetically in the Avatar world, because we've seen no indication of anyone except for brown and black hair colors.
Yeah.
What about young Bumi?
Britt would argue with you profusely and say that ginger can result... What did she tell me once?
So it can be a recessive gene.
It results from any time, in any place. It's actually a lack of genes.
We've seen literally no redheads, though.
She explained that to me once.
But yes. Wasn't young Bumi a redhead?
It was like an Auburn.
Yeah, it was close. It certainly wasn't this red. I think, but this can be explained by hair dye.
I was
going to
say,
easily.
She probably dyed her hair.
Yeah.
You know what? I don't even care.
And I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, agreed with Sam.
I'm pretty sure they
had red hair. Wow.
I'm pretty sure they had the capabilities for this hair dye in the 20s. I think so. Probably very earlier, because it's just natural red from the ground. Yeah. You can tell I know a lot about that. Yeah, exactly.
They put, like, tomatoes in her hair.
Moving pictures. Seeing movies in the Avatar world.
Didn't they use the horse thing?
Yeah, that's like ostrich horse.
Ostrich horse.
That's like an actual like thing. I forget what it's called, but like in the beginning of film, like that was like they did like this horse thing. I learned it in class once.
With Howard Hughes?
No, Howard Hughes didn't do it. But it was like one of the like beginnings of like film and like moving pictures was like a film of a horse moving. So yeah, that's a nice little thing.
Yay.
Anyway, so I guess the last thing I want to talk about here is how Asami is relegated to the background by Varric. And so in this instance, I'm going to assume that this is not sexism on the part of the show, but intentional sexism, showing that Varric is more willing to deal with a male than a female, and that this is maybe just a sexist time. Comments.
Yeah, I mean, because she got what she wanted through Bolin, who's, you know, it had to be through another guy. And he's like, oh, you brought your best... I forget what he called him.
Tiger shark?
Your tiger shark out here. And he's like, you know, dealing with Bolin. He's like, oh, I'll make you a deal. Blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, most of what he's saying isn't to Asami.
Yeah, and certainly you can look at this and not as sexism, but as just Bolin being refreshing, which is how the scene portrays it. But look a little deeper, and it's like, oh, he's just dealing with the male.
And it's possible Asami anticipated this, which is why she brought
True. This could be a calculated move on Asami's part, which would be very interesting.
Well, Asami's a smarty pants. So.
There was also some nice, what do we call it? Balsami goodness. That dad hug.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Bolin doesn't blush when they hug, I don't know.
But they're
a bit confused, though, about why they're after Varric. Because, like, hey, we're all ready to ship these planes. Oh, sorry,
she needs an investor.
It's not, they don't say that, I don't think.
No, well, it's, you know, it's probably what they mean, but it's just things for children, but essentially she needs a backer for, I think, production of this stuff and sending it out and getting people to buy it. I mean, I think she just needs a sponsor, essentially, an investor.
Distribution channel?
Yeah.
Maybe?
Probably, yeah.
She needs it all.
This is just implying they don't really say any of this.
Yeah.
It's not important.
Well, I guess not important. This is the last we see of Asami, I think.
Yeah.
Or she's at the festival.
She's like in the background at the festival, I think.
Yeah, okay.
But was she? I didn't even see her there.
Yeah, unfortunately. But this is a good idea. Why don't we take the best character from last season and relegate her to the background of most of this season? That's like a great idea, right? And then take the worst character from last season and make him... Actually, they kind of relegated Mako a little bit in these episodes.
But I didn't think he was too insufferable.
They demoted him to the boyfriend.
Certainly, they tried to make him less insufferable. I guess we'll talk about that in a second. But first, let's get to the revelation that Tenzin and Tanrat ordered the seclusion of Korra instead of Aang. And this, I loved that this, because we originally learned that Aang ordered this, and I was like, Aang would never do that. So I'm glad that Aang did not do this.
Good job.
Yeah, especially since it didn't make much sense if they didn't explain why at all. Aang, like, yeah, I mean, yeah, yeah.
Like, Aang would be just like, hey, like, come on. We'll have to go, like, through the mail chutes or Umashu, and, like, let her go ride on the backs of
giant koi fish.
You do you,
Korra.
And Tenzin would totally do this. Like he would totally.
Yeah, it seems in character.
I want to know why Tenzin is such a hard butt.
All the time.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, tushy. I don't know.
I mean, look at his parents.
I mean, I think the idea with Tenzin when they're making his character is that a lot of times children go the opposite way of their parents, and certainly Tenzin acts the opposite of Aang.
He doesn't even call Aang dad.
Yeah, it's interesting considering the one child that's not an airbender, those two are more like... The two children, sorry, that aren't airbenders, those two are more like Aang than the one that actually looks like him is. So, and the one that you'd maybe expect to be more like Aang.
Let it be noted for later that this is my Exhibit A for why Korra is not acting like a jerk in this episode. But anyway, this in terms of it is deserved, because that she's mad. You learn... that it was actually your father and your mentor that shut you off for your entire life. That's kind of should make her more. She doesn't really react that badly in the scene, but when she probably dwells on it, it seems horrible to her. Continuing on, we see, let's talk about all the interactions in this episode of the Katang baby slash babies. We see like two lines from Kaya, I think. We don't really get a sense of her personality at all. Jinora hugs her right away, and this is This is the assumed connection between Jinora and Kaya that we were told.
And that's as far as it goes, I'm sure. Just that one hug.
That would be, yeah.
That would be her aunt Kaya.
And that's it.
Yeah. Opinions on the non-Tenzin Cloud Babies. We already talked about Bumi. Opinions on Kai. And opinions on
I like them a lot better.
Now that they're interacting, you think?
As Cloud Babies, yes.
Yeah, I think certainly when we get the Cloud Baby adventures later on in the season, it'll be nice.
I do like the dynamic that Kai used to pick on Tenzin all the time. Not that I'm an advocate for bullying or anything, but it's cute.
This is one of those things that I think is an example of my opinion that things are kind of just a lot of stuff happens in the episode and it's not really tied together. This is just thrown out there very quickly, and it's not really given time to breathe.
Well, it kind of ties to the fact that him and Bumi and Kaya really don't have that great of a relationship. And what Katara says at the end, she's like, you know, you'll be grateful for the time you have with your siblings, and you should learn to get along. And,
relative to the rest of the episode, it's like
you said Sokka.
Oh, Sokka, yeah.
Well, I said Sokka, not Sokka.
What does that have to do with
anything?
No,
I said Sokka.
Relative to the rest of the episode, this is given very little time, I would say. But yeah, certainly it's funny, the Tenzin getting bullied stuff. I guess this is a good time. I'm not impressed with J.K. Simmons' voice acting.
I didn't even think it sounded like J.K. Simmons in the beginning.
It didn't.
I was like, did they change his voice actor?
He's like, oh, you got picked on, Tenzin, is like, not anymore. It's just, everything he says sounds the same, which is in character, but, like, I can use a little more emotion from him. I think one part of the reason why I'm not too attached to Tenzin is maybe because of his voice acting. And it's disappointing, because he's, like, the biggest name, and everyone loves J.K. Simmons. We will reserve judgment, I guess, too much until we see more of him this season. Let's talk about Makora and Mako. First, Makora being the ship of Mako and Korra. So this is another example of something they do in this episode, which is like a sitcom trope. Mako becomes the boyfriend, and it's like, how do I deal with my girlfriend? And it's like, let's approach it from three different ways. Let's approach it from saying what I actually want to say, I don't even know what he says
he thinks she wants to hear.
Well, yeah, you think she wants to hear, and then say something really general, and maybe she'll like it. It's not original. I think this is a calculated move to try to make Mako not awful. That's what I think.
I
think it works because I don't hate Mako, but I hate the way it's written. Like, I don't, it's not his
character. Not because it's Mako.
But just because it's so stereotypical and honestly pretty sexist, we'll get into that. But
I mean, one thing I don't mind is him being negated to the boyfriend.
Sure.
That's fine with me if that's the biggest thing he does.
But it's also like, how do I deal with this object? Not this object. That's saying too much. How do I deal with
girl?
I mean, I'm saying object. Yeah, I'm putting words in their mouth. Robin, but it's like, how do I deal with girl is a big thing.
How do girl
exactly? But yeah, so this is
how in Bobby form.
See, like in book one, Mako interacted.
I heard that.
Mako interacted perfectly well with Korra. Like, why does all of a sudden he need to figure out how it works? I mean, I guess it makes sense. Like,
well,
we're
it's
so
a different dynamic now. I mean, he feels like he needs to impress her and keep in her good graces because he's her boyfriend now, and it's, you know, as far as he's concerned, you know, oh, it's my job to please girl and that sort of thing, which, I you know, falls into the trope, and, you know, it's just a change in dynamic that, you know, before he wasn't afraid, I think, to tell her off because there was nothing really at stake because, you know, they weren't in a relationship. And, you know, for a while, it didn't seem like they were going to be because of that deal with Asami. But now it's like, well, I don't want to, you know, make my girlfriend angry. So what do I do?
I think we're just really trained to expect this trope. So it certainly seems natural. I also don't, and it's not written horribly. Like, Tim Hedrick's writing this episode. Tim Hedrick's a great writer. I also think it's probably just attributed to Tim Hedrick and it was more of a group effort. But none of this is written awfully. It's just, why do we need to go through this?
Are we going
to
talk about the cat face?
Yeah. So, the cat face. if you want to make on your keyboard :3, that's what Korra's face was when Mako feeds her cotton candy.
That's Allie's favorite face to use as well.
Yeah.
No, I thought Allie's favorite face was... I don't even know.
What? No, she makes the little :3 face.
Not that often. I don't know.
Sam also embarrassed Allie in front of Janet.
Oh, yeah. We'll talk about that later. Not now. But this.
Also.
What do you
think? Hold on. I wanted to say, you're talking about, like, tropes. I think there's a reason why Avatar and Korra make up, like, one of the most... like the biggest pages on TV tropes, because they use a lot of them.
They use a ton of tropes. Certainly, they use a ton of tropes. Also, I think the amount of tropes on TV tropes is reflective of the show's popularity. But anyway, Makora, how do you think Makora is handled in this episode? Not just the cotton candy. But just overall, their relationship dynamic. Were you liking it more than book one?
I'm happy that it's not all lovey-dovey and stuff. Like, they have conversations, they get into arguments. She's not seen with him 24/7. He's not seen... Well, I think he's only ever seen with her in this episode besides the police thing, which I don't care. But, you know, they're not focusing on it too much. It's just, it's kind of almost a plot device where it's like, okay, use a conversation between these two to show how aggravated Korra is, and then move on from it. You know, because the both times she was interacting with Mako, it ended up in sort of a less than ideal outcome of their conversation.
Mm-hmm. maybe just more on their like romantic interactions, I guess. I don't know.
I'm just really disinterested.
Well, yeah, certainly. Like, they didn't, obviously, we're coming off of a season where Mako was a bad character, and Korra was a bland character, and the relationship was hated by many. But I guess it's an improvement because I didn't outright hate what was going on, I more just didn't care.
Well, I also
I liked it better this season.
Teresa, go ahead.
I was saying, I think I liked it better because it wasn't, like, the main focus of the episode, and I hope that it stays that way, because I think it's cuter and a little bit more tolerable when it's just kind of a side plot. And I thought their interactions were cute. I mean, they were a little bit more realistic, that their interactions seemed a little bit more realistic by comparison to the epic romance they had going on in season one.
I love you. I love you, too. I mean, yeah, what I like is that what they talk about is not, oh my god, I'm so in love with you, I'm so, you know, they're talking about real, actual things. Like, Mako's telling her about his day, about busting some guys as a police officer. She's talking about her problems with Tenzin and Ulok and her Avatar problems. It's not, like, conversations about, where are we going to eat dinner tomorrow night? It's like, you know, they have real interactions, and I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I hate this pairing.
when Mako at some point says, make up your mind, probably the second time during the festival, being super annoying and Mako-y. That's probably the most hated Mako moment in this episode for me. Do you sympathize with Mako that he wants Korra to make up her mind about what he should say?
I couldn't care less what Mako wants, to be quite honest. And I don't think he's very qualified to judge on how she's acting, because he's never been a 1,000-year-old reincarnated spirit person avatar. So he's in no position to judge.
Korra's been a bit of a grumpy gills the past two episodes. These episodes that happened tonight. So.
Do you sympathize with Mako?
No, I don't know. No? I don't care.
I feel like I don't sympathize with him, but I don't want to put all the blame for any like annoying lines he had. I don't want to like blame him for everything, because Korra was being kind of insufferable too, so I think they're like equally at fault.
Like, every time they talk and Korra storms off, it's her fault, I feel like, you know.
Agreed.
The only thing I care about is Bolin.
He has a lot of patience.
Okay, but let's talk Bolesca. Favorite lines in this episode include, the north is my favorite direction, and obviously I'm going to make you mine, or what is she? What's the specific line?
You amuse me.
Yeah. And then, one we didn't know about before is the Bolin saying, am I like in a boyfriend way or a slave way? Which
she just says yes.
Yeah.
Who tries it?
Let's relate everything to gender roles. Is the show being dumb here by thinking that it's so, how do I phrase this, that it's so outrageously funny in a way that a female could be dominant like this in a relationship? Or am I stretching in my relating everything to sexism?
I think that
might be a little bit of a stretch. That.
Mel and Sam?
What was the question? You said that
it's funny that Eska is so, that Eska is dominant in this.
Is it like, I don't know. I don't think it's a problem that it's like, haha, it's the woman who's dominant now. Like, I don't think that's,
I don't think it's, I don't think it's haha, but it's, Mel is like not able to talk right now. She's talking. I can't say what she's saying.
She says that she doesn't appreciate it.
Anyway, I think this is like subtle gender roles and sexism and stuff. Okay, Mel.
I don't know. I think it was less. Sorry.
Mel is unfortunately leaving. So I don't think.
Thanks, Mel.
Yeah. Anyway, so I don't have someone to back me up on this. Anyway, I feel like it's
not supposed to be more like outrageous in the fact that she's dominant. I think it's more just the personalities and the way that their personality, they interact.
Certainly,
that's supposed to be.
I guess the point is that it's coming from this male to male But yeah, I'm not really well positioned to back this up too much. I do think I'm not off base though, but.
I just don't really understand what you're trying to say.
Whatever. Next, win. Oh, and she says, "Win me prizes." The Aang squirt gun game.
Love it.
Yeah,
that was weird.
That was awesome.
Aang, Momo, and Appa all together in a game.
So, yes, and then the Appa plushie. That was wonderful.
It was beautiful. It's like Allie has an Appa plushie named Avatar.
Okay, so let's tell you a story. Allie suddenly realized she needed an Avatar plushie over the summer. And she went to eBay and saw a listing, or I went to eBay and found a listing for her, and the listing description said, this is The Last Airbender plushie, his name is Avatar. And so now Ali's Appa is named Avatar.
It sucks that Mel left.
Yeah, I know. Mel is the, unfortunately. But, yes, that's a nice little throw-ins here. It's unexpected to me. They didn't really do this type of thing as much in book one.
It's cute. It's like Avatar Day almost, except less.
Yeah, you're not burning them.
Destructions.
It's very Avatar Day-y. So the spirit attack in this episode, the main conflict. We see pretty much each character come in and try to handle the spirit on their own.
And each character fail miserably.
Yeah, except for Inuwak. Jeff, do you have any comments on this, the fight and the action and stuff?
Yeah, so this is the first spirit fight with Korra and all them. Yeah, so it's just the music was very low, which might have worked in a few other fights before, but not here, I feel like. And there's like a... It felt like a Shyamalan thing. A little bit. But... Actually, I didn't think that when I watched the episode, but now thinking back, I'm like, Shyamalan choreographed bad, this show choreographed bad, or this scene did, so.
Yeah. I usually don't have much to say on fight scenes. I thought this was pretty boring, though, I guess, would be my overall thoughts. I'm thinking about it a little more, the antagonist in this fight is like a non-entity. And I feel like it's like we don't have someone to root for or against. And in fact, we are trained to root for spirits, I think, by Avatar. So it's like this, there's like no stakes in the fight. You're not really rooting one way or another. And you're not, there's no personality to the villain, et cetera.
Yeah, I think it's just like, hey, this is what's going to happen pretty much all season. It's a spirit and we're trying to save it from stuff or whatever.
Spirit shows up, beats people up, gets golden bended, and then...
Bended.
Korra going into the Avatar state, she does this a few times in both episodes. What is your opinion on Korra just being able to casually go into the Avatar
state? That's dumb!
Explain.
Wouldn't know why it's dumb?
Why?
Because in Avatar, how long did it take for Aang to, like... You know, do the Avatar state stuff. We had like a whole episode dedicated, like in his chakras, cleared, and like we had a whole season being like, "Oh, Aang, he died, and he can't get in the Avatar state anymore." And plus that rock thing, everybody's so mad about, and it's just not fair that Korra just gets to, "Hey, Avatar state, there we go, poof."
Jeff,
not cool.
Do you agree, Jeff?
Where were her chakras?
Yes, I do.
Teresa.
Yeah, I agree. I think it could work if they explained it, but I agree with Sam. Like, what happened to the whole chakra thing? Why did Korra not have to do that?
This is boring.
Aang, especially because she is so much less balanced than Aang was.
Yeah, she is.
So, a comment on that in a minute, but this is just more of Mike and Brian ignoring 219. Like, an episode they wrote and purposely included.
And I really like that episode too. Like, come on, dude.
After the second season, there's pretty much no evidence that episode ever happened except for chakras, and it's
everybody loves chakras.
It's astounding that they don't care about that. Like, this was the main theme.
And those were the
two
best episodes too. Like, come on, guys.
Lovers,
shut up.
Okay, a question though, like, if they had had Korra go through this whole chakra unlocking thing, wouldn't it have seemed a little bit repetitive?
Yes, but why does she have to go into the Avatar state at all? Relating to what Jeff said, Korra's more unbalanced than Aang. Maybe this is why her Avatar state is weaker. The spirit easily takes her, beats her when she's in the Avatar state. which is interesting because we see the Avatar State more as an all powerful thing in Avatar.
Yeah, she's not making like huge Koizillas, so.
Well, because her spiritual connection isn't even that good at all, so.
Yeah, so it's probably just much weaker.
So it's Korra-style Avatar State.
Yeah.
All she can do is just beat little kids in air scooter races. That's it.
I like that description. The fight scene, underwhelming, I guess. And then at the end, Korra rejects Tenzin and goes to, says she wants to go with Tarlok. Not Tarlok. Ooh, Flip-Off.
I kept wanting to call her dad Tarlok, and it was really confusing.
I've seen people comparing Unalaq and Tarlok. I don't think there's a connection, but I think that's interesting. I want to note the animation in the scene, specifically how the people look in front of the backgrounds. I don't know how to describe this.
I don't remember this.
They look like cutouts, I think, is what I would describe it as.
Oh, kind of like they were just like photoshopped on top of the background.
On top of the background, yeah. That's what it looked like to me in the scene.
I didn't notice.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I've only seen it once in really good quality, so I could be. That's what I wrote down when I watched it. That was maybe one of the weaker points of animation. This, I also think, the animatic scenes. When we refer to the animatic scenes, it's those backstory scenes in the beginning of the episode where we see what each character's up to. I don't think those were particularly well animated either.
But the CGI...
Was the CGI was okay. good? It was okay!
It blended a lot better this season.
It blended a lot better, season. Yeah.
Sam
yeah,
said
exactly.
The CGI it was
better.
Okay. Everything is crazy. We've never heard this before.
Bright rainbows.
Reality has shattered.
We'll see if this continues.
Next, you know, the four horsemen of apocalypse are going to come.
Yeah, like, that's the next logical conclusion after this. Katara, at the end, talks to the things, and Katara says you should be thankful that they're siblings.
That line killed me.
She says something else. She says some other emotional line. I don't remember what it was, though.
I don't remember because I was just busy crying over that one.
Sokka.
Sokka's like the only character we know is gone, I think.
Yeah.
We'll get
I don't want to think about it.
There's a trailer at the end that we saw at the beginning of this episode, and we'll talk about that, and we'll see who this Fire Nation lady is. There's some theories on that. I think that's the specific stuff we get to in this episode. Comments on specific things that we didn't mention that happened in Rebel Spirit.
Oh, Katara held... What's his face? Rohan.
Rohan!
That was cute.
Oh, yes.
Adorable.
Very.
That little... I don't remember if it was in this episode or not. The little carrying case that Rohan has that on Pema's back.
I think that's next episode. I assume it's next episode. I didn't notice that.
We didn't talk about how, like... I was really sad when the whole cotton candy scene thing, and Bolin just looked so like disgusted with them, and that made me feel really sad because Bora is still to my heart.
We'll get to that. In the next episode.
Bora hug in the next episode. Yeah.
I still have Bora in my heart.
Yes. Something we'll be doing for each episode, as the same as last season, is grading the episode. Now I will normalize the scale, though, because everyone had different grading scales. So let me explain our new grading scale. We'll be grading out of 10 for each episode. 5 on a scale of 1 to 10. There's no 0. 1 to 10. 5 is an average episode of television, not an average episode of Avatar. For me, an average episode of Avatar is about a 7 or an 8. An average episode of television. 10 is a best ever episode of television. For me, this is the season 1 finale of Avatar. So what did you think? Give me your overall thoughts of the episode in terms of quality, more from a critical eye. And what would you grade the episode out of 10? Let's start with Sam.
Oh, God. Why does Mel have to not be here?
Yeah, see, now that Mel's not here, you're first.
God, I hate her so much. I don't know. Out of 10?
Yeah, and I do not care. Out of 10 is not an option. Not.
I don't know.
We'll come back to you. Teresa.
Thank you.
I was originally saying 7, but now with the new scale, can I do like point something?
Yes,
can I fraction
certainly.
It?
Yes.
I will go with a 6.5.
Okay. Why?
I don't know. I mean, just because I might change it when I see other episodes, but I feel like we're going to get so much better to come. And like, I don't know that I want to compare it to what we haven't seen yet, but it didn't exceed my expectations. I'll put it that way. Like, it wasn't like, oh my gosh, this is the best thing ever. It was just kind of like, this is pretty much how the first episode of, it reminded me a lot of the first one of season one.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Jeff.
I would give it a B plus and a half, so maybe a 7.
Okay, so I don't think the grading scale goes well with the out of 10. I think a C is about a 5, if I had to pick something. Mm-hmm. So you think a 7? What did you? Is this lower? I don't remember. Is this like lower than your grades last season?
It felt like, I don't know. I mean, like I was never really. I don't think I was. I don't remember being blown away by any episodes of Korra.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like not new for me. Not new ground. It's like okay, I wasn't blown away again. Good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Sam, do you have a grade now?
I don't know.
Just pick a number.
Fine. Maybe like a 6.5, same as Teresa, because it wasn't that great. It was just like, it's an episode, yay, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It exists.
Yeah, I'm gonna, this is, on the news. This new scale, this is a 6, I think, for me. Maybe a 6.5 or 7, it's somewhere in that range, but I'm gonna go with 6. I think this is probably an above-average episode of television, but writing-wise, it's not particularly, like, it's okay. It's not bad. But just, I think overall, the episode doesn't come together well. The stakes aren't there on the where it wants to be emotionally, as I mentioned before. And it's the typical Avatar season intro. It rushes into everything, and it's fine if we get there in the rest of the season, but for this episode, it doesn't work on its own. That being said, it still certainly made me excited for the rest of the season, and we'll see a new episode in the Southern Lights now. So yeah, that's the Rebel Spirit. Now we will be having a mid-podcast plug for Audible. I had the thing up, but I don't have it up anymore. Basically, Audible has an exclusive deal, not really exclusive because other podcasts have this, but for you, the listeners of the From the Spirit World podcast. If you go to our unique podcast URL link, audibletrial.com/FTSW, you can get a free 14-day trial, which includes one free audiobook download. Now, you're probably skeptical of this, but this is actually free. The thing is that if you want to not have to pay, you must manually discontinue the trial after 14 days. I think they probably require your credit. I mean, that's how free trials work everywhere. Like, I've done a lot of free trials, and that's the conditions. But yeah, you really do get a free audiobook download, and you can claim it, and if you do, it supports us. Teresa has a book to plug. Well, we're going to be recommending books that we like, basically, and which we think you would like. Teresa, tell us about the book you have.
Okay, the book I have is called The Way of Kings by Brandon Sanderson. It's the first book in a series called The Stormlight Archive. The second one's going to come out in, like, December. It's kind of hard to, I'm trying to think of how I can summarize it, because it's like a 1,000-page book, and there are lots of different storylines that all tie in to a very, very good plot. But essentially, you're following, I think, 4 characters in this world that's ravaged by these really harsh storms, and there's like a war going on, and there are strange forces at work, including the reappearance of an order of knights that has been lost for like a millennia, and they are coming back through your main character, who's really, really intriguing, and there's lots of action, and there's a little bit of romance, and it's just really, really well written, and it's on my favorite book list, so I highly recommend it.
And Jeff, you know this author as well?
I have read one of his books, the first of the Mistborn trilogy.
Also incredibly good.
Very interesting premise.
So
yes.
This book apparently is 1,000 pages.
Yes, it is.
And the audio version of this is, what, is like 47 hours.
So, oh my good lord. Maybe this wasn't a good one.
No, if you want to like listen to it for 2 days.
Get your money's worth.
This
go
is
ahead.
A great one because it's free. You can get 47 and a 47-hour audiobook free. Like, that's good. You should.
I might even do this, yes,
you
even though I've already read the book.
You should go to audibletrial.com/FTSW and get your free download. Anyway, so let us move on to The Southern Lights, the second episode that aired. I guess it should be noted that these two episodes aren't meant to go together, I guess. They kind of, one takes place after the other, but it's not a two-parter like episodes 3 and 4 are going to be. It's natural to be annoyed at Nick for not pairing up the two episodes that are meant to be together and instead pairing up two episodes that are unrelated.
You know what? Degrassi does it all the time.
It's interesting because Nick actually hadn't done this before. Like, usually they do pair up two-parters and make it a special and make it a big event. I think Korra, the first two episodes, I guess the Korra, it happened with Korra, the first two episodes, but those maybe, it was more like, here's one half the intro, here's the other half the intro, and maybe felt more together. But in Avatar, they had left the intros alone to each season. Southern Lights is written by Josh Hamilton, who wrote on Avatar, along with Tim Hedrick. Josh Hamilton did Cave of Two Lovers, among other episodes, and is directed by Ian Graham, who is a new
director.
Is he
the one that did Josh Hamilton? Is he the one that did Sokka's drawings all the time?
I don't know. I don't remember, unfortunately.
Thanks, Don.
Okay, The Southern Lights. Give me, we're not going to start with Sam, so
thanks.
Give me
thank
your
you.
Initial reactions to the episode. What did you think of it quality-wise? What are you going to pick out that you loved about it? Let's start with Jeff.
Well, I thought the conflict was resolved in typical Avatar Universe fashion. Just, you know, hit him in the back of the neck, or back with a rock, or touch the floor with your finger. But really excited for the way it's set up the next episode.
Touch a floor with you.
Yep.
About it. Did you like it overall?
I liked the backstory bit. I didn't feel invested in this. Like, it didn't give me enough information to care about this. Like, spirit portal needs to be open. What?
Yeah.
Why does it need to be opened? And why does the Avatar have to do it? Why does he know about it? None of that. Just go do it. Go and do.
Mm-hmm. Teresa, what did you think?
Okay, well, first of all, I'm wondering if anyone else was completely taken aback when it, like, started the new episode, because the other one didn't even seem like it ended at all.
Well,
maybe that was just me. Like,
we'd seen the first
episode.
Before, so.
Well, I hadn't. Yeah. I was very confused. But anyway, I thought, I agree with Jeff. I liked the backgrounds. The backstories better than the actual plot of the episode. I think it's hard for me to get invested in the whole thing with the way the spirits are, because it's just so, like, the spirits in the forest and all that stuff and the lights and crap, because it's so different from what we had, even in the first season of Korra and especially in Avatar, at least I think it's approached very differently. But I think it was better than the first episode in terms of, like, story structure. It definitely seemed to have a much more developed plot line for the episode, and it wasn't just, we have to remind you who all these characters are.
Mm-hmm. Sam?
I really liked it, I guess. I really liked all the, like, I like that we have, like, a plot B now, like a B plot, like with Tenzin and all his stuff and whatnot. I like that we have that back from Avatar. It seems to me like the show is looking a lot like Danny Phantom, because all the portal nonsense.
Korra went ghost. She
did.
Yeah.
Like, come on, guys. Like, come on. This is like, I need to see that crossover. I liked all the Boleska. I liked the little Bora hug at the end.
Still holding on tight.
I still have Bora in my heart.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, I know it's not gonna happen. Yeah, I thought it was an okay episode. Like, obviously, I feel like episodes in the beginning of a season aren't as strong as they are maybe, like, in the middle.
Yeah.
So, hopefully it'll... I think there's, like... We have, like, a ways to go, like, upward in terms of quality, but I think it's a good start.
What's so interesting about this episode is this is, like, a combination of a Korra episode and an Avatar episode. Because, as Sam mentioned, it had an A and a B plot, and which is really... Which is, like, something Korra Book 1 didn't have as much. But there's still this whole plot, like Korra had. This is not an episode Josh Hamilton would typically write. Like, it was really interesting seeing him write plot. And I guess this is more of a cohesive unit. Like, Teresa mentioned there's, like, a goal and stuff. There's things that tied everything together. So it, like, doesn't have my complaints of episode one in that regard, but there's still a lot of disparate story elements. Like there's this random backstory. It pulled a second to last episode of the book one in that it just had one act of the episode was just backstory. And I didn't really care too much about backstory where it was a character involved that I'd seen talk only a few times before. But it was somewhat interesting and it was a very general story that wasn't really developed at all. We'll get into what it even means. And then at the end, they're like, here's some information. One part of it connects to what you know from Avatar, but the rest of it is very random. And Korra is going to enter a generic spirit cave and just solving the conflict by touching the thing, as Jeff mentioned. And I don't know. What was the strong part of this episode were the character moments, everything with Eska and Desna, everything with Bolin. He continues to be the MVP. And
he is the MVP. He's the best.
And honestly, I like Korra. I'm going to disagree with you guys about this, I know, but I liked Korra being pissy.
Yes, we will disagree about
this. Yeah, like, mm-hmm. I thought this was justified, and I kind of thought it wasn't good that was her only personality aspect this episode, but I like seeing that out of her, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, it's never fun when somebody's being all grumpy girls, you know?
Grumpy girls.
That's never fun. That's never a fun time.
And I guess overall, I think this episode's better than the last one, but not what I was expecting from book two so far. It's still exciting, but we're not quite there quality-wise yet, I would say. So, identifying the main plot of the episode, as I said, I'll do this. I would say there's two main plots here. We have Tonrak versus Unalaq, and kind of them clashing throughout the entire episode. And then there's the spirit journey that underlies it all. We're going to the South Pole and to find this portal. How do you think those were handled together, I guess, these two pretty big plot arcs in the episode?
I don't know.
I feel like they weren't handled really together at all. They seemed like two completely different stories that just happened to be in the same episode. They didn't really overlap at all. Not that they would be able to. I don't know. It just seemed... I feel like I would have preferred it if it were just stuff about like Tonrak and Unalaq, or if it were just a spirit journey.
Jeff?
I guess they overlap a little bit. Only in as much as Unalaq says that the spirits are attacking because Tonrak's there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's it.
Yeah,
that's true.
And it's like, oh, now we realize why, but then they never really get back to that. Yeah. But let's go through specific things in the episode and we'll get back to this. First, we have to figure out what this camel is. That's in the beginning of the episode.
That's the most important thing.
It's obviously part camel. But what other...
It's just a snow camel. No, what's that thing at Star Wars? What's that thing at Star Wars? That thing that Han Solo rips up with.
It's a tauntaun.
It's a tauntaun, yep.
What other animal is this a hybrid of?
I don't know.
Does it have to be... Appa wasn't a hybrid with anything else. He was just a bison that flew.
They're not
going to
just have a random camel.
They had a
it's
bear.
It's just a white camel.
Okay, yeah, how about like
I mean,
a polar bear
this,
camel? Was it a polar bear camel? It could be.
This makes sense to me because...
Like a polar bear.
No, listen. So they're going across like a frozen wasteland, right? And camels are usually used to go across a desert wasteland. So it makes sense to me.
What, that doesn't make any sense.
It was like a woolly camel. Sense. Does that
make
you
sense? Right. because it makes no sense. It makes every sense in the Avatar universe.
I see. It's just camel, dude. But did we see camels ever before? I don't remember.
Surely you mean platypus camel.
Exactly. That's what I was doing when I was watching this. I couldn't pay attention to what Unalaq was saying to Korra.
What if what other mammal has white fur?
It could be,
I can't think of any other one.
Yeah, it could be a polar bear. Yeah, it's probably
a wolf.
Wolf camel. There you go.
Okay,
Arctic fox.
Fox camel. Those are our best guesses. Okay, they're going to the South Pole. Like I said, I didn't catch much of this conversation. Honestly, I did watch the episode twice. I don't think.
Did you focus on the camel both times?
Yes, but yeah, it was like Unalaq was saying stuff, and I didn't really care. That was what the conclusion was. The scene wasn't very good, I don't think.
I know that feel.
Yeah. I think this, when I was watching it, and then my thought process both times is like, oh, I'm not really paying attention to what they're saying. Oh, does this happen often when I'm watching TV and I'm not paying attention to what people are saying when there's only dialogue? And so I was obviously very bored by the conversation. Southern Air Temple, Air Acolytes, they don't really identify them as such, but.
They call that one guy one weird name that must be a title.
Abbott,
a monastery. Yeah, Abbott, that's it.
Interesting.
Must be a monastery title.
Mm-hmm.
That's when Pema's carrying Rowan and that weird thing.
Yeah, this.
So cute.
I think what's so interesting. Okay, two things are really interesting about the scene, other than that it's at the Southern Air Temple. But one is that they're, like, making the butt of the joke the past Airbender culture, which I think is interesting. Like, it almost seems unfair to the airbending culture because no one present took part in this. Like, Tenzin is the representative of it, but he never lived in it with the rest of the airbenders. It's like we're making fun of this head thing, but maybe this was useful. I don't know. To me, this wasn't as much.
It didn't look useful to you.
To me, this wasn't as ha ha ha. It was like, oh, that's sad.
It's like, where's Aang when you need him?
I would Aang would disapprove of this, guys. Come on.
Well, no, I don't think so. Because he likes fun.
Certainly, but...
He would have thought this is awesome.
He probably likes flowers, too.
If Aang were supervising the writing of this episode, he would have disapproved with the tone in which it was written. That's, I guess, my point. The second thing that's interesting is that we are finally seeing mentions of the fact that the airbending kids are the future of airbenders, and there will be more airbenders. It's like... So, if you were unaware, Mike and Brian at some point did an interview, and they were like, is Aang the last airbender? Will we ever see more airbenders? Will they be repopulated? And they're like, no, it's the title of the show, Aang's the last airbender. And it's like they never really thought that they were ever going to have this happen. And now it's happening, and they've seemed reluctant in book one to mention that, not mention it, because they're obviously there, but that...
Kids have kids.
Yeah.
That's the thing that happens eventually.
Well, the airbending is being passed on, that it will continue, and now it's being explicitly stated by others. Like, you'd think this would be a big deal, especially the Acolytes, but certainly to the rest of the world, that these three kids are, like, the future of airbending.
These are kids. There are things.
That's a very intelligent analysis, yes. Anyways. This is the second Jinora and Iki interaction we see. I don't remember what they say to each other.
Iki was like, either. That present's mine. And Jinora's like, you don't even like books.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I'm a little... I like Jinora being kitty, I guess, because we usually see her being really serious.
Mm-hmm.
What do you call it? No, I guess we'll get to it. Go on, Dylan.
Milo says he has Pokey now.
That was cute.
I hope he comes back. I hope he stays.
Yeah.
Pokey's
new Momo.
Yeah, actually, it looks like a lemur this time.
Yeah, I don't know what species they are. The Meg and Brian were like, in answering interviews, how are there new bisons and lemurs? And they're like, oh, we'll explain that. But they haven't done that. Haven't done that.
I think they just said that Aang found them somewhere.
Where the heck were they hiding?
Yeah.
Guys, wait.
Tail Island.
Wait, hold on. Give me 2 seconds. One of the top trends on Twitter is Legend of Korra.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I saw that. I'm so happy.
By the way, ratings come out Tuesday, so then we will see how Korra will be rated. Airbender Resendant, I've written down. The Acolytes are like... It's that I'm talking about Bumi and
yeah, Kaya. That's the thing I wanted to talk about.
So it's like they're it's more manufactured by what the guy is saying, but they're like upset that they're not airbenders. It seems it's like
I think it's less that they're not upset that they're not airbenders. They probably like being, you know, waterbender and non-bender, but it's more of like everyone's like, oh, Tenzin has this great destiny to bring back the airbenders, and they're like, yeah, okay, we get it. We've been dealing with this for, like, how old is Tenzin? Like, 50?
And plus they have to carry their own luggage, too, probably.
That's
like, oh, you're not airbenders, go away.
This is really why I thought the Bumi theory was so good. Like, this makes sense that Bumi would be resentful of this. And we kind of see it here.
You talked about the Bumi Amon theory?
Yeah. In conclusion, Bumi is still Amon, is what I'm trying to say. I still believe.
See, I liked that theory until I heard Bumi speak. And I was like, he's not Amon.
When we heard him speak, it was already the finale. So it was a little late for that.
Well, yeah, I know. But I mean, like, I was thinking about it these episodes. Like, when he was talking, I was like, remember when we thought he could have been Amon? Wow. Then again, I also thought that whistleblower guy was Amon, so
yeah, that theory didn't
talk. I shouldn't be talking. It was a good theory.
Except Jeff. Jeff nailed it. The Everstorm.
This was so stupid.
Mike and Brian continue to impress with naming things. They're so good at naming things. First, we have Republic City, which everyone hated at first, but now we reluctantly call it. We have Yue Bay, which is funny only because we can imagine Sokka naming it Yue Bay. And now we have Everstorm.
Everstorm. It sounds like Danny Phantom. Like, come on, guys. It sounds like something Danny Phantom would have.
Why is the storm going on perpetually? Do we know?
Well, they said it's because the spirits are all locked down.
Yeah.
But didn't we see the Southern Water Tribe in the beginning of the first season, and there was not a perpetual storm happening then?
Well, so what I don't like about this is that this episode is hinged on the fact that the Katara's village is not actually in the South Pole. It's not actually on the South Pole, which was never said in the series. We only ever saw this in like extra content on Nick.com, where we saw, oh, there's a bunch of villages in the Southern Water Tribe, which we still see no evidence of. But we saw like where Katara's village was situated, and it wasn't actually in the direct south. But it was never said in the series. So now this whole episode is predicated on something that was never clear, I think.
Yeah, I was very confused with location for, like, these whole first two episodes. Like, I didn't know where the festival was. I didn't understand. I was like, wait, I thought you were already in the Southern Water Tribe, but you're not. Like,
They're drawing a distinction between Southern Water Tribe and South Pole in this, when I think they're probably used more interchangeably in the original show.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we see the scene. We got the scene early. The twins are in the sidecar. I have a lot of stuff here written at once.
It doesn't make sense.
Okay, so we see the Eska. Eska says, does this vehicle have room for two people? That joke
You totally skipped a little argument that they had, or did, was that just not paying attention?
I don't know if I did.
They had like an argument, like Tanrok and Unalaq had like, rah, 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 and Korra's like, Dad, go away. And Bolin just rolled up like, "Hey guys, I have this thing."
Okay, well, I'm not trying to recap everything. Apparently, I didn't think that was important. The important thing is that we're talking about this gag. The more important is the joke that they're making with the sidecar thing. Honestly, I don't think it was very clear that it was like Bolin thought that they would both ride in the sidecar and someone else would drive, but it was actually the twins riding in the sidecar. It wasn't like convoluted, but it was a joke you had to think about for
a little bit,
a little bit, and it was very beat, so like you didn't have time to actually think about it.
I love Bolin.
Bolin was great. I think this joke wasn't well executed, I guess, as much.
I feel like I didn't get the joke until after the episode ended. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when she was asking, like, does this happen for two people? It's like, oh, she's asking if she and her brother can come along.
Yeah, like, you would think that. Like, that's the natural thing, because you see them side by side all the time, but then you realize what Bolin's thinking it means. But you don't realize that until after it happens. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then Unala... Oh, go away, Mako. So, who says this, Bolin?
No, yeah, yeah, Bolin says it. Like, Mako's just like, hey.
Well, looks like someone, and then he's just like,
go away, Mako.
He was about to do one of his stupid little lines.
Yeah.
And thankfully he didn't.
I kind of love those.
Shut up.
The reason why I noted this is because Bolin echoes our sentiments here. and this is in contention for being added to the quote lodge in the beginning. Certainly. Go away, Mako. It's a great line. We see Unalaq ramble off about a ton of stuff. Ancient spirit portal. Why didn't we hear about this from Aang?
I don't know.
Why did Aang need to go to the Fire Nation to get in contact with Roku when there was a spirit portal in the Southern Tribe he could have visited?
Maybe because Roku was from the Fire Nation.
I don't know. Maybe they didn't
know that it was in the Southern Tribe because the Southern Tribe was, like, completely, almost obliterated then. They maybe had forgotten
it's like
their boundaries and stuff.
I think we're going to run into this problem a lot this season. Whenever they're world building, it seems fake because we've been in this world for years. Since 2005, we know a lot about it. So when they're adding something on, we'll see this again in the flashback to the thing. Great. We'll see this in a few minutes. But whenever they're trying to add something on to the already established mythology, it seems bad. It doesn't seem bad. It seems fake. It seems like, why are they making stuff up? Do other people echo these sentiments?
It could be done better, I think, but it doesn't seem like just downright fake to me.
And making it up as they go along. Okay.
Yeah.
There's a thing.
In a new series, it's much better to do that. It's than now. The thing that's cool is that this portal is only open on the solstice because that's when the two worlds are closest to each other. That's directly echoing season one of Avatar.
They're conveniently there on the eve of the solstice. It's like every Avatar episode. Oh, let's get by this deadline. Oh, look, we're here.
This is almost like the finale of Danny Phantom, where, like...
Stop relating have, like, everything
No, like, they had, like, the
it
thing
totally
where,
makes
like...
Sense.
It turns out they had, like... No, maybe it wasn't the finale. It's, like, the season 3 opener of Danny Phantom, where they had, like, these ghost portals that, like, popped up everywhere, and there was, like, one in the Bermuda Triangle, and it was weird, and, like, just ghost portals randomly pop up everywhere all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
No problem.
This is the type of thing I think they should do more and not be, oh, there's a random spirit portal here. They should connect things to the already established mythology of the two worlds being closest on the solstice. That was good. Anyway, so they're at a campfire. And first of all, it should be noted that we saw this scene in a preview somewhere, and Korra's face looked the same as Eska's face, but they corrected that if you look, and it's different. So they actually have been working on post-production on these episodes within the past like month or two, I think. Bolin's like, I don't like, or Mako's like, Bolin doesn't like scary stories, and then Eska says, I will, don't worry, I'll protect you, my little turtle duck.
Oh,
which is a great line.
It was just, I love it.
Boleska is the ship to be shipping right now.
Oh yeah, I'm hoping that it will
the
take, like,
it is the
like
in-ship.
I'm hoping that, like, since Makora was kind of the focus of the first season, that now, like, our ship, the main ship of season 2 will be Boleska.
But I really hope that maybe they'll get, like, serious, like, Bolin be just like, hey, why are you being, like, all this, like, to me? Like, why are you being all to me? And she'll be like, I don't know.
Yeah, but that would involve Bolin actually saying non-funny things, you know?
Exactly. Well, I know.
Wow. Imagine that.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I can't. It's never happened.
It's literally never happened before.
Bolin being serious.
Okay.
I feel like that's maybe had one moment like that in this first season.
I really just want Bolin to be like an actual character. Like, I love him to death.
It is frustrating. So we have a flashback here. This is all very generally told. It's told by Unalaq Tonrak, not Unalaq. I'm pulling a Mel here. That we don't know too much about. He's recounting the Northern Water Tribe is attacked by quote unquote barbarians, as he says later. So this is this is what I mentioned before of them expanding on something that we don't know about. First of all, we don't know that there's other people that live in the Northern Water Tribe. We've never seen that before. Who are these people? They're just people were expected to believe that some barbarians are there, as he calls them. That's not even a satisfying explanation.
And well, I think this is, like, awesome for me, because you see these people in the finale of book one, right?
Do we see these people?
Yeah, yeah, totally. They had a crew of them on their ships. They were manning the turret, their catapults.
Oh yeah, and there so, were.
What are you
and so, yeah, like when Aang went to take out the Fire Nation ships, and he went after the catapults, they had these guys that looked just like these people in this episode running around.
I see what you're saying.
So it's like the Fire Nation appropriated them, say, "Hey, we'll pay you. Come help us out here." But okay. They actually live up there.
Okay. I don't think... Okay. I see. I always thought of those people as Fire Nation... People from the Fire Nation.
Totally, yes. Same here. But apparently, looks like not.
I think... Okay. It's possible they did that intentionally. I'm not sure if they did. I don't know if they look... We never really see them up close. So I don't know if we can...
No, I think, like, as they were writing the episode, they're like, oh, they're just Fire Nation people in warm clothing. But maybe they...
So you're saying they intentionally went, they thought of this as they're writing this episode and said, oh, we can explain that further. That's interesting. My initial reaction isn't to give them that much credit. that would be cool if that was the case, though, and I'd love to, if someone asked Mike O'Brien that. So I guess we'll leave it at that. So then we also see that there's a spirit forest in Northern Archive, another thing we didn't know about. This also kind of contradicts the existence of the spirit oasis. It's like, here's the only green place in...
Well, no, it's like it's the most spiritual place.
Yeah.
I agree with you, Dylan. I think I don't like that there is a spirit forest and then also the spirit oasis. It kind of negates the importance.
I guess it doesn't technically contradict it, but it takes, I think it takes away the importance of the spirit oasis.
Just really weird. Why do they do that?
It's just all this stuff that they're throwing at us that we didn't know about.
Well, you know, it's possible that this forest only popped up in the last, 20 years.
Yeah. So that's interesting if the spirits created it. If they add more story to it, then that would be good. But for now, we get very general descriptions. So yeah, this entire flashback. What do you think of it, Jeff? How did you like it in the context of the episode and even standing on its own?
This whole like spirit conflict, you mean?
No, just the flashback to Tonrak and his stuff.
Oh. I think it was a very good setup. I'm looking forward to more flashbacks to this period of his life where we get more of the story of like what Unalaq is actually up to. Which is obviously no good.
Well, we'll see. But it would be interesting once we have a more established character to go back and see Tonrak and Unalaq. But I think having a flashback right away after we meet them is maybe a questionable writing move. It's like I think flashbacks are often predicated on us knowing these characters, and it's like, oh, there's things we've known these characters for so long. Like this is why Tarlok and Amon's flashback was so successful in book one. We'd seen these characters so often, and now we're seeing them in their past, and we're seeing the true nature. It was so successful because those characters were established already, and here we don't have that.
Yeah. That's the thing.
Okay. Thank you for that. we go back to the Southern Air Temple and the statue room, and Jenora and the Aang statue.
They were having some bonding.
Maybe my favorite moment of the episode. I think that it was very good.
I'm really excited that Jenora is going to be like a spirit guide thing.
Yeah,
Me too.
I guess this is getting ahead of myself, but for a while, I thought that next episode would be what we saw in the trailer of Jenora and Korra in the spirit world. Because we saw it kind of inching, like, Korra was going to a place that could connect her to the spirit world, and then Jenora was seemingly something spiritual was happening with her, but then at the end, it doesn't happen.
I thought Jenora was going to get, like, sucked into the spirit world.
Yeah, that's what I thought was going to happen, yeah. So I also think this is a weak point of this episode. We see two ambiguous things with Jenora that are not resolved. And this is more of a looking at the season as a whole instead of episode by episode, because these are clearly meant to be resolved later, but if you just evaluate the episode on its own, it's like, why is this here? Jenora sees something behind her in the scene, and it's not clear what it is. And then later, the statue that she's looking up lights up, and we never see the resolution of
that. Who was that statue of?
Well, that's what she says.
I think it's probably, wouldn't it be Avatar Wan? I mean, I would assume it looked pretty old.
I thought it was a woman. I didn't know. I don't know, though.
There's just some thing.
I don't know.
Thing.
It was...
But anyway,
what I want to know is, you know how in Avatar The Last Airbender, when Aang went into the statue room, Roku's statue is in the middle of, like, the spiral? Who moved every single statue to make room for Aang? You'd have to shift them over one all the way up. That was for some reason
probably,
all I could think of.
Probably the air acolytes, yeah.
No, they probably bring in
Earthbenders
for that, though.
No, Earthbenders
not I just
not
couldn't
allowed.
Help thinking that.
No, Earthbenders allowed.
You're not allowed.
I pondered the important things.
I probably wouldn't be allowed. I wouldn't be useful.
They probably, like, asked, like, Earthbenders, like, hey, come on.
No, I think the Aracolites, I like seeing the Aracolites, imagining the Aracolites picking them up one by one.
Just moving them all over.
Yeah. It's true, though. The setup was clearly different in the room.
Earthbenders would be so much easier.
Anyway, so the lights out in South. What does that mean?
The what?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know what I mean. Spirit... So Unalaq says the line that the lights are spirits dancing in the skies.
That is how those work.
It's unclear if that's metaphorical or literal.
I think it's literal.
It seems like
I think
you're
it's open
literal.
For interpretation.
But that isn't how. It sucks we don't have Brit here.
Lights out in the
like,
south. So this was him explaining that before the Hundred Years' War, there were the Southern Lights, but then it shut off after the thing happened.
The thing. Like,
the
maybe
war.
The entire tribe getting wiped out except for, like, three huts.
Yeah, so that's what I'm talking
that
about.
That thing.
So this is another thing of establishing something where we didn't know about it, but it's better because this took place before Avatar was. So it's not necessarily contradicting anything that happened in Avatar.
That isn't how those lights work. It's like...
It's
science.
Not... Obviously, it doesn't work the same as our world.
This is like a bunch of old world explanations of stuff.
It's interesting, yeah, it is.
Like,
yeah,
the moon is actually
I
a
love
thing.
That there are scientific explanations for this, and all the spirit stuff is just phony. That'd be great, if that's where they're leading.
That'd be terrible, that'd be no fun.
we'd be seeing the conflict of modern technology coming in with the spirit world, and how they're explaining stuff. We know that that's going to happen at some point.
The moon isn't actually some random asteroid that pulled into the Earth's gravity.
It's the
princess of the Northern Water Tribe.
Well, it's still...
you know, I think it's totally plausible that that spiritual level of the Earth, whatever, is like very closely tied with magnetism.
Yeah, I agree. I think this.
There you go. Yeah.
If it's literally spirits flying in the sky, it doesn't make sense. But if you're taking it somewhat metaphorically, but not completely, then it could be like spiritual energy or. Maybe traces of the spirit world are showing themselves there.
It's a lot like old Native American stories as to why things happen. Like, I feel like once I heard, like, the Earth is actually, like, a big turtle. Things happen.
It's also pretty similar to Buddhist philosophies on this, or at least... I'm taking Tibetan religion right now this semester, which is, like, perfectly timed with Korra, which I didn't intend it to be. But anyway, there's like gods of important nature structures in Tibet for each one. Like there's a god of each body of water and each and mountains and stuff. So I guess it somewhat makes sense here. If we at some point I'm going to talk more in depth about comparing to Buddhism to what we're seeing here, just the traditions in Tibet. But it doesn't line up obviously because gods versus spirits and stuff. I think I got the impression of here was more so than ever that the spirit world was its own. World in this episode.
Just like the ghost zone.
It feels, I don't know if this is a change, but it feels like they more explicitly referred to it as a separate world, and I started imagining it as like a different planet.
It's the ghost.
I don't know. Anyway. But it's interesting. The philosophy on this is like it's a different plane, a different world. I don't know.
I'll tell you what happened. Sam, you know those, notes from Nickelodeon they get sometimes like oh do this or that like hey then they receive a note hey guys this is called Spirits is it well we
Danny
have
Phantom.
A really good show called Danny Phantom you should check it out
cross promotionalism yeah like
Nickelodeon. I don't know but Nickelodeon didn't really like Danny Phantom they kind of
yeah they didn't get canceled pretty early
Yeah, it got canceled early, and like they shoved it. Like, you remember how they did with like Avatar? Like
yeah.
the last, like I don't know, 5 or 6 episodes, they just chunked it all within like a week.
So I don't think
they did that with the entirety of season 3 of Danny Phantom.
Oh, the entirety of season 3. Okay, that's bad. I think that was a philosophy of Nick at the time that this was a good
chunk
idea.
It all together.
They did this with several shows. Nick isn't smart about programming. They're getting better. Certainly, they've been promoting Korra and stuff now, and actually moving Korra to 7 at Fridays.
I'm so happy about
good.
That.
Yes, that is also very happy.
I don't know. I feel like 10, no, it was like 11 at Saturdays was better.
Well,
really?
For reaching an audience, I think it's better.
It's better for us.
We see a spirit fight now. This first of 2 in this episode.
We see a what?
A spirit fight.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. With spirits.
There were like 5. What one is this? Was there one spirit or was this the multiples?
This is like the little ones, and then Bolin's like, he's in the engine, and
that's right. I love that moment.
That isn't even like a funny line. It's just how PJ Burns says it is really funny. Like
PJ Burns
everything Bolin says.
Like think about that line like on its own. It's not like why is that funny? But it is funny. I don't know.
It's like how everything I say is funny.
That's true. Everything is
because it's from my voice.
It's like you said it like it's like, oh, I guess this happened now.
Yeah. It's very good. PJ Burns continues to impress in the voice acting department. This fight is notable in that the animation is just awful.
No, wasn't it, like, the same...
This was Chicken Arms scene. Chicken
yeah.
Arms. Yeah. So, they didn't fix that.
They didn't change it at all.
Chicken
when I
Arms
they
scene?
They showed this in the initial trailer.
We had, like, a, what? Didn't we have, like, a 2-hour podcast
yeah, about
this
just that
scene?
Trailer, yeah. Not this one scene, but the trailer. And, yeah, they don't fix this. This scene, there's just bad body proportions, and it just doesn't look very good. The animation in these two episodes is pretty. The colors are good. Colors are more vibrant. It's certainly.
Oh, I want to talk about especially like in the flashbacks, like how they redid the Northern Water Tribe. I thought that was really nice. It was really
beautiful.
I love
the Northern Water Tribe.
Explain how they redid it.
No, they didn't really redid it. They just like did it again. Rather, like
what
maybe
is this,
they
like,
reused
redoing?
Like the same. Oh my god, I don't think they redid it. They just it looked nice.
Okay.
Fell.
Who fell? Some one of you two. Okay, anyway. I hope you're okay. But anyway, it's not so much that the animation itself is bad. It's a different style, certainly, but it's just it's like it's not consistent like it was in book one. It's not Studio Pierrot who does the I guess I didn't mention this before. Studio Pierrot now is the Japanese animation studio that they hired after Studio Mir passed on doing book 2. Studio Mir is the South Korean studio that did book 1, and they didn't do Avatar, but several people from them, then they formed a new studio, probably.
It's not bad, it's just different.
It's different, and it's not consistent, I would say. There's several
it's
times...
It's like how in Avatar, it wasn't consistent.
It's like Studio Mir is the JM animation of Avatar, and Studio Pierrot is the DR movie. It's just a inferior animation quality.
Especially, like, during Bolin's scene after the whole flashback, it was just, like, I feel like they were trying to get him to move in, like, an anime sort of, like, really, like, frame-by-frame way. Like, very limited way. But
I remember that.
I would like to do a roundup of other shows that Studio Pierrot has done to see how they are.
Yeah, I agree. There's some... I can't pull it up right now, but there's a few big animes that they did.
I have to look that up now.
Yeah, it's discouraging. I would say this episode specifically in what we're going to get from the other first half of the season, which theoretically Studio Pierrot will do. It's just not the level of animation quality we're expecting, especially after over a year wait for this book. And this isn't like Mike and Brian's fault, but do we?
Well, so is this plausible how this works? They go to Studio Mir, and Mir's like, "No, we're good." So they go to Studio Pierrot, and they're like, "Okay, we'll do this." But then
they did Bleach.
Back.
Yeah. Okay. There you go.
Okay. So the work starts coming back, and like, this is kind of horrible, but we don't have time to redo it. So Studio Mir, can you please do the second half? And they're like, "Okay."
Yeah.
Is that Naruto.
I think that's exactly what happened. Actually, yeah. That would be my best guess. And I also think they said, Studio Mirror, can you touch up this stuff that we got back from Perot? So maybe that's why it does seem somewhat consistent with the animation we saw from Book One of Korra. Like, I think the average viewer might not notice the difference that much.
I didn't notice any glaring issues, so I guess I'm just not that much of a...
I think the glaring issues happen pretty fast. Like, it's not super obvious, but if you look in somewhat...
Freeze frame, yeah.
Yeah, if you freeze frame or even just watch it again, I think.
That's true, I didn't rewatch.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to talk about the animation, but if you're not finished talking about the specific scenes in the studios...
No, I don't even remember what I was going to say. Go ahead.
Okay. I was just going to say, as long as we're on the subject of the animation, I have to say I noticed that it seemed a lot more... I don't know how I should describe it, but like the angles that they used for some of the scenery, it was very different and more elaborate from what you normally see in an animated TV show. Like, one that I really stuck out to me was when Korra was going into the frozen forest, and there was some sort of, it was like the screen was tilted and it was kind of an above angle, and it was all like walls of ice and she was walking through them. Like, it was just, there are cool shots that look very high quality, I think, and not easy to animate either. Like, it wasn't just she's just walking straight forward. It was like, well, what if we put the camera over here and like, you know.
I think that's a good point. Mike and Brian, and specifically Ryu and Joaquin, certainly don't make it easy for the animators. Like, this is certainly high quality storyboarding and stuff that they're trying to attempt here. And they expected this to be animated by Studio Mir, so it's not like they might have made it simpler if they were going to do it to a new studio.
But you know, according to Wikipedia, they co-did Porco Rosso with Studio Ghibli.
Well, they probably did.
Oh, wow.
They probably did, like, additional animation or something.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I don't know. A lot of times anime studios collaborate, like, in terms of another one helps out if they need stuff, I think.
Sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the thing that happens.
We're going a little long here, so let's speed up a little bit. Mako, keeping an eye on Korra. So, Exhibit B, for reason Korra should be pissed. Korra clearly has demonstrated anger at her father in the past scene.
Daddy,
now,
why did you eat my fries?
Exactly. That's exactly what I mean. And then her boyfriend goes ahead and she sees him in the distance talking off with the person who she is angry with. That is not a good move, Mako. Like, that's obviously bad, and I can totally understand why Korra is frustrated.
I don't think that Mako did it to be a jerk. I think he I think that he should have worded it a little bit differently. I don't like the term "keep an eye on her."
Well,
but so if he had said something different, it might
be
like
not even like Korra heard what they were saying, because she asked, "What were you talking about with him, or why were you with him?"
That's true.
So it's not. It's just the action of doing that is not what.
Daddy,
you
want to do. Why did you talk to my boyfriend?
So this is an Adventure Time reference, if you're not aware. Anyway, Korra. On her own into thing. I'm good at outlining. She goes, Unalaq's like, Korra, you have to go into this ice cave alone. And she's like, okay. And so,
no, she's like, okay, I'll take my friends. And then he's like, no, you have to go alone.
Yeah.
Why?
Why? I don't know.
This is just like in Firefly when, has anyone seen Firefly here?
I have.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Yes. Wonderful. All brown coats. Yeah. So yeah, like when Mal's fighting that henchman, like in the elevator shaft, and then Zoe's like, "Wait, no, we can't help him. He has to do it himself." He's like, "No, you don't. Or no, I don't."
Yeah,
Avatar was about the power of friendship.
That was subverting this trope, and instead, Avatar is continuing with this trope. Yeah,
like if they had explained it, like, "I want to take my friends," like, "No, like you have to go alone," and then she's like, "Why?" It's like if he had said like. Honestly, I don't know why you have to go alone, but all my reading says you do. So that I would have accepted. But
what does he even say? Like, he gives some explanation.
No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't.
He says something.
He says you just do.
I don't remember what he says.
He says you have to believe in yourself. Like,
okay,
really?
Whatever. I don't. No, he does not. I don't think he said that.
Yes, he does. He said you have to believe in yourself the way I believe in you, and like the
I believe in mine.
Okay, so what they're going for here is Korra has been told what to do these past several episodes, and that she says this herself. She's like, after all this, I can do something on my own. That's great. I actually think this works. I think it works from the angle that he is manipulating her, And based on how she is feeling, and she and her feelings on this are understandable based on what we've seen in the rest of the episode.
She's just being way too easily manipulated.
We've seen this from Cora, though, in the past. She's very naive, and I think this is a character trait of her. I think this is consistent.
This is boring one. Well, I hate naive characters. Stop it.
She's locked up for her entire life. It makes sense to me. I don't know. Anyway, so then we have this Jenora scene. What avatar is this? And we talked about this a little bit. We don't know what avatar this is. And
it's that avatar. You know,
I think it's Wan.
I don't know if it's... It might be Wan. And then it lights up. And then Jenora's... Then nothing happens, and we don't see the resolution of it, but we talked about it already.
Like what? I was expecting them to be sucked into the spirit world.
I thought that's where they're going. Yeah. You see them in the trailer in the spirit world. I'm looking forward to that so much, but no. Cora.
No, well, here's what happens. Jenora gets sucked into the spirit world, and like Tenzin and Kaya and Bumi all like go after her. That's what I think.
Yeah.
Happens.
Okay.
Yeah. Probably.
Gosh,
yeah,
like, Kaya and Bumi
Jenora
in the spirit world.
But first,
hilarious.
We have a civil war in the middle. So you know, I don't know how that plays. Cora.
By the way,
Cora attacks light in the dark with fire.
The spirit orb thingy on the floor, and she like slices it with air and then fire.
Oh yeah, I think that's me being sarcastic. Great move, Cora. That's totally gonna work. So yeah. Okay, here's the.
Well, it's ice, so maybe she thought she could get.
This is another example, in my opinion, of anonymous enemies not working. All these snake spirits in the cave, and I don't care.
They're mooks.
Like, what is their purpose? Are they guarding? Are they?
Yeah, it's not clear.
They're like video game enemies.
Exactly.
And in fact, Cora, it's not in Avatar. This would be seen as bad Cora attacking them, but we don't see it as bad here. So I don't know. It's change in attitude, seemingly, or is it? It certainly should be different with the different main character, but the show's perspective of this has not, at least from this, is through the eyes of Cora. So
I'm
saying. Well, I'll bet you Aang would have attacked them. Like if they're in this unbalanced evil state. He would have at least used airbending to push him away.
Oh no. Possibly. Aang probably would have just been talking to them the whole time, like, hey,
why can't
I'm
we
on
be
your
friends?
Side.
Yeah,
anyway.
Well, it's just like how he dealt with the swamp monster if he thought it was a spirit.
Yeah, okay. That's a good point. So, here's a little rant here. We see the snake spirits form into tentacles and attack Cora.
Oh.
Okay, so here's the deal with having women in animated shows in tentacles around them.
Well, can you just, like, not... I mean, is it the rule that you can't do that ever? I mean,
it's no, the rule is that everything does that, and why are you doing that, Mike and
just
Brian?
Stop.
Why would you think this is a good idea?
Yeah, why is this a good
idea? Certainly she's not sexualized here, but... It's the natural, that's the first thing you think of when you see this, if you are familiar with it.
First,
anime.
Like, the homophobic thing with Bolin in the first
and
episode,
now, we
now
see
this.
Cora,
it's
not, we're not really seeing her exploited, but
no.
this is what you're doing when you have this happen. If you're not familiar with this, then good, because this is a bad thing to be familiar with, but it's so questionable. Like, this is actually the second time we've seen Cora tied up with things around her. It actually happened in episode 1 to a much lesser extent, but she was also entangled in ropes. But yeah, this isn't pleasant how it's presented. It's not like she's completely not sexualized either. They are pretty clearly wrapped around her everywhere. And I don't know, I'm just so frustrated by this. Why would they do it?
Well, see, they've done that before in Avatar with male characters.
Example?
Sokka and the Swamp Monster.
Interesting. So,
and, I mean,
possibly.
Like, as someone who has literally zero familiarity with what you're talking about, I didn't have a problem with the scene.
Okay, sure. I think this is somewhat integrated into main culture. Into mainstream culture. But not to a... I can't, like, say what it is because it's not good. But...
It's not appropriate.
Yeah, anyway... You think, okay, this is where someone would say, oh, Jeff's right, you can have a male character this, why don't you have a female character this? Statements like that are missing the point in sexism arguments. And you really shouldn't make them on a real level here. Not specifically Jeff, I just mean people in general saying lines like that about other things. You can't suddenly make the sexes equal in every single situation when the problem is that one is unequal. So it's different with a woman here. And that's just the way it is. Like, if Korra was male, this wouldn't be as bad, but she's female, and there's tentacles wrapped all around her, and it draws certain connotations, and it's not good, and I don't know why they feel the need to do this, because it does exploit her. And the end, bad, more sexism in this episode. Next, why are you initiating physical contact with another woman? Okay.
Best so this line is ever.
Another line, another problem. Oh my god. So this is the thing with me, actually, recently, is I just find sexism in everything. Because there is sexism in everything, but these two episodes haven't been great. Eska, this is a funny line from Eska, I would say, and Aubrey Plaza delivers it pretty well. But it's also like, oh, if we're having a jealous female character. It's like, oh, of course this has to happen.
But, you know, the Bora is still in my heart.
Yeah, so let's talk about the Bora hug that precedes this.
Yeah.
You mean that moment when my heart ripped in two?
Sam, what do you have to say about it?
I don't know. It's just like, Paula, just like, hey, Korra's okay. And then he went over and hugged her. It's adorable. And Eska's just like, hey.
That was like the most emotional.
Stop doing that.
That you've ever displayed.
No, I'm sure I've displayed
well, more. Well, of that squeeing type, I would say.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, it doesn't, I don't know. I don't get the impression that Bolin has romantic feelings in that scene.
I know, but still, it's nice because they're still friends.
I'm sure people are still shipping Bora.
They're yes, we are.
Friends. Yeah, it's still my heart.
I would recommend giving up on it because it's not productive.
You tried to get me to give up on Taka, too. You know, it's never going to happen.
Why can't they just be friends?
I will persevere until they finally ship an Earthbender. Or, like, an Earthbender and someone from the Watershed. I don't care.
Well, then again, that's what Boleska
is. Well, you know what?
That is Boleska, yeah. Therefore, your new ship is Boleska, in conclusion.
But still, I still like that Bolin, like, he's not all salty about Mako and Korra.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he still, like, Bolin's cares about Korra.
In conclusion, Bolin's a great person.
Yes, she's the best. I love her.
We also have a Makora hug. This would be better if we...
I'm surprised that they didn't kiss, I like to be
that.
Honest.
I love that reaction.
I was just waiting for them to kiss the whole time.
Yeah, apparently no kissing is allowed, you know. Except on last season, but yeah.
Kisses are only for important events.
Kisses are for season finales only, guys.
Yes.
We're not season getting
finales and like really like drama filled episodes like The Servant's Pass. That's
yeah,
the only
that's
time.
True. Yeah, exactly. We can't just have kiss. It just
in the Cave of Two Lovers.
Well, questionably, except according to me and Jeff's study, they do. They do kiss. You can find that on.
Yes.
Yes. Yep. Anyway, it would be helpful if we had someone who shipped Makora here, but we do not because not many people do.
I mean, I kind of have to at this point.
You don't have. You can't. I can't force you to ship it.
Can't force
I don't
you to
mind
ship
it as like. I don't hate it as much as I used to, but I still. Like, if it was a choice between anything and Makora, I would probably choose anything.
I agree it is much less detestable now. Certainly.
I just don't care about it at all.
They're not really important anymore. Like, their romance isn't important. It's like, okay, yay, it succeeded, now what? Like, you're just there.
Yeah, exactly. You're just there together.
And Korra's like, oh, I'm sorry, I was pissy before. And she's like, it's hard being Avatar. It's harder being Avatar's boyfriend. And it's like, okay.
I thought that was cute.
It's like, okay guys. That right, was my
guys.
Reaction to that.
Like, oh, you.
I hate, yeah, oh, you, exactly. I hate that Korra's apologizing, because I don't think that she has anything to apologize for, but I feel like it's, like, good that a person apologizes after their upset, even if they don't have to.
Well, I feel like Korra needs to be more humble, but, you know.
I feel like if she should be apologizing to anyone, it should be her dad. I mean, I'm not saying that she's completely in the wrong or that he's completely in the right, but he's still her dad. He should not have given in to her sending him away like that, and that was what upset me more. I was like, why are you apologizing to Mako? Why don't you go talk to, like, your dad who you just made, like, told him to go trek across the frozen wasteland by himself because you didn't want him anymore?
Because he ate her fries.
Sam, opinions on this?
About Korra.
Korra and her dad, was she disrespectful to her father?
I guess, but I don't know if it's justified or not, really. I haven't really put that much thought into it. I think it's just, you know, Korra, I feel like, is one of those people who, will take a long time to, like, realize that she's done something wrong and hurt people's feelings. And it will take, like, a long time for her to apologize. And especially with what's coming up with, like, what I think is happening with Unalaq, I think she's gonna, like, go back and say, Daddy, I'm sorry, to her dad.
I'm really not looking forward to that. So my initial reaction, this is kind of like me admitting a fault, I guess. Whenever I see a female character standing up to a male character, ever, it's not their fault. They're not doing anything wrong. So, of course, I'm not going to think that Korra is in the wrong with her father here. I think that it is a problem if the show is portraying this as bad and then she apologizes later, because a big problem I've had with these past two episodes is that it's not about Korra choosing her own path. It's between choosing the path of two older males that she has to follow.
Yeah.
And it's portrayed as going with Unalaq is her own way, but it's really just which of these male-dominated figures do you want to go with? She doesn't really have any choice. I want her to lash out in this situation. This is oppression. This is the patriarchy.
But yeah. I think they can easily fix that. They can easily, through the episodes, they can have it be like, well, wait a minute, hang on a second, like, this still isn't my decision, like, well, let me do what I want, and then maybe, you know, I mean, I still think that Unalaq is gonna, you know, get what's coming to him, because I'm pretty sure he's probably gonna be the main bad guy.
He's gonna be the main antagonist.
The problem with, I don't know, I hate that they're, like, at the end of this episode, and it's like, oh, Unalaq's a bad guy. I like the way they executed the end of this episode, if it had to happen that way, because it's not like, Unalaq doesn't sound sinister, he doesn't sound acting with malice.
He sounds like this is just a thing that he has sounds to do.
Not necessarily reasonable, but it's not obvious that he's a bad guy. He's not obvious that he's the villain here. Which I like, because I don't want them setting us up for two episodes of trying to of doing the, oh, of course, you go with Unalaq. It's like, oh, Korra's making a mistake. Oh, it's going to pay off now, after the second episode of the show, when we thought it might go all season long. I don't want Unalaq to be bad, I guess is what I'm saying.
I do.
I think it would be so much more interesting if he wasn't just, oh, this Korra, oh, Korra's gonna have to go back to her daddy, because that's obviously she should go to.
I don't think that's, like, a thing, though. I feel like she's still, like, mad at her dad, and she's not gonna, like, go back to him.
Well, if they can find a way to do that, if she can reject Unalaq but also still be mad at her father, that would be good. What I don't want them to do is, she has to go running back to her father now, the person that she realized was locking her up her entire life.
Yeah. Maybe she'll be like, I'm sorry that I was such a poop-faced dad, but, you know, you're still a poop-faced for locking me up.
They're both in the wrong.
That would be definitely acceptable, I would think. But yeah, I don't know, I hope next episode it's not, Unalaq doesn't just turn into a villain. I like that it's entitled Civil Wars, because Civil Wars doesn't necessarily imply a wrong side. It's more of this isn't a conflict where this country is figuring it out.
I don't think they're gonna, like, paint him as sort of a villain. I feel like it's gonna be like, hey, this is a thing I have to do, and what's his face? Tonrock's gonna be like, hey, I don't like you invading this place, and it's gonna be like, argh.
I feel like he has plans for the whole world, he said. So I think it's going to be sort of like some sort of religious extremist who...
Yeah, I didn't remember that was the line he said. So
I guess I'm also afraid that they're going to paint spirits in a bad light. Which obviously they're not going to do that, because just Avatar is so pro spirituality and religion and spirits, and now it's not. The tone is not consistent with that of Avatar so far. But yeah, I'm cautious about how they will be handling this, because at the end of this episode, I would say the end of this episode is similar to that of the end of Cave of Two Lovers, also 202, actually, in that we see this jarring ending cliffhanger. It's like, oh, Omashu, oh no, and now we see, oh, the ships are coming, and bad stuff's happening. And obviously this can lead to that. Okay, so we're pretty long here. let us grade. There's any for any last thoughts on anything we missed in this episode?
One thing that I forgot to mention when Unalaq was addressing the Southern Air Temple or Southern Water Tribe, and I can't remember if we talked about this, but like he said, as your chief, you know. So like he's called the chief of the Northern Water Tribe, but apparently they've set it up so that he is actually the chief of both, which I didn't anticipate.
I thought that Tonrock was the chief.
Yes.
Maybe he's trying to make a point. They don't dwell on that at all, though. Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, I guess we'll see about that next two episodes. It's called Civil Wars Parts 1 and 2. Let's start with Jeff. What would you grade this episode out of 10? 5 is an average episode of television.
Say a 6 3/4.
Okay. Why?
Because I didn't... It was about the same as the first one, which brought up to a 7, but then it got knocked down a few notches because of the total lack of explanation for why Unalaq was telling Korra to do these things. And also, total cop-out to, you opened the portal, yay.
Yeah, that didn't go anywhere, yeah. Also, the touching thing was just dumb, but then also what happens after that?
We won the day.
Good stuff. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. We have lights now.
Teresa, before you have to go, what would you rate the episode out of 10?
A 6.7. Because it was a little bit better than the first one, but not that much. I don't know. I mean, I'm not really too hard on it, but it didn't blow my mind. The animation blew my mind. I really enjoyed that from an artistic perspective, but I don't know. I felt like it was kind of choppy, and I don't know. I'm still not sure what I think about the whole spirit storyline, which is unfortunate, seeing as how that's probably the basis of the entire season.
Yeah. Okay. Sam, what would you grade it out of 10?
I think I'll give it a 7. I don't know. I feel like it was a good episode, I guess. I don't know. I feel like it was better than the first one. Why am I giving it a 7?
Because reasons?
Yeah, is that a valid reason?
Since we're short on time, yes, it can be. I will give this a reluctant 7. There's so many problems with it. I think it's very interesting, though. The flashbacks are interesting. I love any stuff with Eska and Bolin. It's just not a cohesive unit again. It is a cohesive unit, it's just not done well.
I'm giving it a 7 because there's more Bolin. Okay, more Bolin. That's why.
The end of the episode's pretty bad. And the stuff with Korra, I don't know if I like how they portray it. And of course, they have the Korra and tentacles thing. Of course, that's not good. Yeah, better than the first
one. I want to talk to you about that tentacles thing afterwards.
Okay, sure. It's mostly not appropriate for our audience, which is why I'm only vaguely referring to it.
I know what he's talking about.
Yeah, it's trust me on this one. Anyway,
I'll take your word for it.
That's it for this. I originally planned to go through the trailer that aired before this episode in depth, but we're only going to hit on a few specific things because we're going long. Not as long as it seems like to us, but...
But are we going to talk about what I did to Allie?
I don't know. After this. Okay. So the important... Let's hit on some stuff from the trailer. The world is entering a new age, says an unknown voice at the beginning of this trailer. Any thoughts on who this may be?
No.
I don't think I saw this trailer. When did this happen?
It aired on Nick before the episode started.
Yeah, I got to the episode, literally probably 30 seconds before it started.
But it premiered on Coronation this week, which is where we saw it.
Didn't Mirror think it was Zuko or something?
Yeah, Mirror thought this might be Zuko, which would be interesting. Zuko's around, but maybe we'll see him.
It wouldn't be Zuko, his voice doesn't sound like that.
We see... I'm looking for new stuff. There's a brown twister over a village. I don't know where this is. That's very interesting.
It's Kansas.
We see Korra saying, "I need you now more than ever." Who's T?
Tenzin
saying, "I won't let you down." So they're going to have some sort of reunion. And then this is during the fireworks scene, which we saw in the Comic-Con trailer, of the spirit bending, floating into pieces, etc. Tonrak bending. There's the building on fire in Republic City, which is probably the same scene that we saw in the trailer of Mako bending and also Unalaq bending underground. We see people rushing out of the Southern Water Tribe. The dark spirits will annihilate the South. I don't know if we saw that line this episode. We saw the scene that I got frustrated with in this episode. My family is going to be wiped out, says Korra. Presumably this will be next episode. Also, we know that, spoilers, her family is going to be... or somebody's going to be arrested in part two of Civil War, says the episode description.
Somebody.
I don't remember who. All I've ever wanted is to help you realize your destiny, says Unalaq during that underground scene, which sounds like a villain line.
I love the next point on the outline.
There's Korra.
What on earth is that?
That's the best way I can describe it. There's Korra with angry doggy spirits behind her.
What does that even mean? Angry doggy
spirits? I can't believe I missed this trailer.
Canine type spirits behind her. So, I missed dragons with Korra? I missed that on here. There's dragons.
Yeah, I don't remember. And like a phoenix thing, right?
It's like a phoenix thing. It's looks like, I don't know if it's dragons or a phoenix or what, but Korra's like, there's obviously spirit world or something like that.
I would probably say something about Game of Thrones right now.
Probably. the biggest thing,
so I'll say it for her.
This is an old Fire Nation lady with fire sages around her, says, "Do you know who you are?" Presumably to Korra. I don't know if she's actually in the shot or not. I don't remember. But there's huge speculation on who she could be. Honestly, if it's going to be a character we know, the best guesses are Honora, who
it's not going to be Honora.
Who is it's a joke, podcast joke that of Zuko's daughter, who is currently the Fire Lady of the Fire Nation.
Is that joke this podcast only, or has it like?
It's a Tumblr thing, but I mean, we're the only ones like pronounce it. You know, like most people don't audibly say stuff.
Just like you were the first person to say Kadeng.
That's my parent. Yeah. Anyway, she is too old to be Honora. Honora probably is 60s, and she looks more like late 70s or something like that. But it could work. Alternatively, this could be an older Azula.
That would
very interesting. Or
I don't want it to be.
I don't think it looks like.
It sounds like Loan Lee's daughter.
Loan Lee's daughter. That would be such a weird.
When did they ever have a kid?
Wait.
What?
This is one of those missteps, huh? Yep. I do those.
I don't know if all this is.
I didn't read that like that. It's together.
I don't know what you're talking about. Anyway.
Niece. How's that niece?
Yeah, that was what works.
I think that it only looks like them because that's our prototype of old Fire Nation lady. Anyway, my name is Korra. I'm the Avatar, says Korra looking up, and that's it. Okay.
Oh, yeah, Wan talked.
I have no idea.
Wan talked in this trailer, yeah. So go look for that, too. We don't have time to talk, but we did talk about the animation. Next time on From the Spirit World, we will talk about our theories for the rest of the season and whether we are hopeful, what our expectations are for the rest of the season, but we don't have time now. In general, I'm going to talk about Sally. So Sam made this video compilation of Allie audio highlights. Because Allie says she doesn't sound like Janet Varney. Sam says she does sound like Janet Varney. So Sam tweeted this at Janet Varney, and Janet Varney responded saying, she was like, "This is so cute," or something.
It's adorable.
And Allie's completely mortified at this.
Allie is so pissed off at me.
So
right
yeah, that's, you can so, go find the link to that. I retweeted
please go
it,
beg Allie.
Retweeted
to
it somewhere on our Twitter. Normally, these episodes I'm pushing for 90 minutes this season. I think we can do that. Good luck. Last year we had
3 hours.
Last year we had 2 hour 30 minute podcasts. This one is actually going to be short. Well, we're pushing that now. Okay. I've been 2 episodes to discuss instead of one, like double the size. I've been Yumeno Still, and co-hosts have been Mel, Sam, Teresa, and Jeff. I edit, produce, and co-created the podcast with AJ. Music credits go to Jeremy Zuckerman, Luke Tripp, and AJ, actually. I'm doing this from memory. Tech director, AJ, Kevin, Jeff. Other stuff. Dong Fang is owned by Jake.
There's Yoshida Brothers did the music.
The Yoshida Brothers have music credits, too. They have the background music for the Quote Lodges and have forever.
May I request during the Quote Lodges we put in the Fragile Turtle Duck.
That's a good one. That's under consideration.
I will protect you, yes.
And so is the Mako, Shut Up Mako line or whatever it is.
That is not consideration. That is confirmed.
That is confirmed edition.
There's no question.
Eventually I'll add these things. Okay. If you enjoyed today's podcast, consider donating to From the Spirit World. All donations go directly to supporting the podcast. You can donate by going to dongwufeng.net/podcast and clicking donate on the top menu bar. So this is new. Trying to actually make money on the podcast, and this will be distributed among all involved in the podcast if we actually receive donations. So, hooray.
Also, okay. If you're poor or whatever, go and give us a nice message in iTunes.
Give us a positive review and also report the negative reviews.
Don't tell them that.
There's a thing. There's a reason, though, and it's because they're so old.
They're old, and
obviously they've got all these like helpful things. So
yeah, and you should say they're personal attacks too, because they personally attack me. So yeah. Anyway,
so like we can't get them to go away because they're so old and so helpful. They're just going to stay there. And
yeah, their system is terrible with what appears at the top. But anyway, you can positive review us, give us 5 stars on iTunes or whatever you think is appropriate. You can view if you're curious about who we are. You can see our podcast bios on the podcast page. dongwufeng.net/podcast, you have podcast bios in the top menu bar. Sam's bio continues to blow away the rest of the competition.
Thanks.
even though she
we
says...
Need the, we need the... Even though we she, need to fix it, by the way.
Even though she says she doesn't have bio writing skills, she does.
No, we need to. We actually need to fix it because we
fixed
have, like,
it
a...
recently.
No, we have, like, a grammatical issue.
Oh, we do? Okay, we'll deal with that. You can email us at dylanorpodcast@dongwufeng.net. I think the podcast email...
It actually works.
I think it works.
Because I emailed Dylan the other day.
Yeah, follow us on... You did? I don't know. Follow us on Tumblr at dongwufeng.tumblr.com, or follow us on Twitter at dongwufeng. You can send us voicemail, so this is new.
I'm the only person that did that.
Yeah, Sam's the only one who sent in voicemails. They're actually the most adorable thing ever. I should have saved them. But you can go to the podcast page, dongwufeng.net/podcast. I don't know if I'll be able to insert the audio into the podcast. I will try. That's very difficult for me because I'm bad at this, but at the very least, I will respond to the question on the podcast. These are audio voicemail messages. If you go to the podcast page, there'll be a pop-up on the right side where you can click. If not that any of you noticed, but our file sizes are now smaller. This does not mean that you are missing any part of the podcast. It just means that Jeff has told me how to compress the podcast file size so it takes up less space on your computer.
And it will download faster. That's what you'll notice.
Yes, hopefully, yes, download faster. Great. So that's not a problem. It's a good thing.
You're speaking a mile.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to wrap up. We're like 2 hours, I think. Maybe more. Unfortunately. So that's all. What should we... Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back every week Friday before midnight, hopefully, even though this won't be up by midnight. What should we end on?
Baleska.
Baleska. Ooh, Jeff, are you shipping the Baleska?
Well, apparently it's the in thing.
It's the exit. That's what I heard. I don't know who I heard that from.
The in ship.
It's the in thing.
You heard that from
everybody's
me.
Doing.
I heard that from me, exactly. So I guess you could, let's end on whatever ship you are shipping most right now. I guess that's Korsami from the Ballad of Baleska. One. So thanks for listening, guys. 1, 2, 3. Baleska.
Baleska. Baka, my heart.
Baka does not count.
It always counts.